And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Unafeared here and declare your independence of me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, F in the B E A U T full studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com. Okay, it's too bad two hands of blue today. I got my blue hand. You know, I was doing aquaponics thing, but anyway, spray insulation foam. Do not touch it with your bare hands. It never cut, it just wears off. Yeah, you know, acetone, don't care. It's a honey badger, a sticky, all right? So that's why I got blue hands for the video. All right. What we're going to be doing today, we have Peter Schiff in the last hour. He's going to go ahead and, you know, a little bit talk about the tribute to his father, Irwin Schiff. I met Irwin in 96 at the Libertarian National Convention in Washington, D.C., where his, man, he just ripped up on the IRS and just, it was awesome. We had a really good time. You know, we got to know he had a single issue and it was damn good, you know. So we had, and I recently watched it again, it was on YouTube. We had it on Freedom's Phoenix and I'm like, wow, that was, you know, that was a lot better than I remember. That was, you know, so good on him. So we'll go ahead and have Peter. In the first 2 hours, we got Paul Rosenberg, freemansperspective.com, secure.cryptohippie.com. And the one thing, there's a lot of things that we can talk about, but I asked Paul before to let's do the show that I did with John McAfee. You know, the original McAfee virus that he has nothing to do with anymore. But he went to Belize. He's just trying to live the life. He's 70, you know, living large, having a good time, and just government will not leave him alone. So he announced he's running for president of the United States of America, you know, with a lot of, you know, I don't know what to call it, a bunch of crypto hippies. You know, Paul Rosenberg, how are you?
I'm well, Ernie. Thank you.
Okay. When you heard that John McAfee was running for president, you went, eh, what? What was your response?
I laughed, actually. I thought it would be, you know, entertaining. You know, what's the value of a presidential election nowadays? You know, it's just for entertainment. I mean, that's the only real value. Either that or, you know, the Blues hate the Reds and the Reds hate the Blues.
Well, you get some education in there somewhere. I mean, it's not
right.
Like...
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it's kind of the point that you've been making, you know, of late. You know, one discussion we had is just, you know, if you're arguing over red versus blue, you're just arguing over how you're going to get ruled, you know? And
yes.
At the top of Freedom's Phoenix dispatch today is the Revolution of One. They're talking, as James Corbett with a gentleman talking about the writings of Sam Konkin. Does that ring a bell?
Sure, I know Sam Konkin well.
All right, Well, help me out with all things Sam Konkin, because I don't know hardly anything. I got to get all into it when I have James come back on and explain it to me.
Okay. Sam Konkin was a libertarian-ish guy who came up with some very interesting formulations. He worked for a long time with Neil Shulman, who I think you must know.
Yeah.
And Konkin essentially created what we call agorism. That was his creation in what he calls agorist class theory. Which essentially just says that rulers are rulers and people are people and there are two different classes, and that's the way the world really works. there's them and there's us, which is, you know, too simplistic for me most cases, but in this case, he's got some truth to it. And there's rulers and there's ruled, and he says, well, if you want libertarianism to work, what you have to do is pull out of their system and stop conforming to the ruled system and just start doing business amongst yourselves and build up your own economy. He calls it counter-economics. And it's essentially an old strategy. You know, it's way back in the Bible, where you just, you know, separate from the things that you don't like and start living your own way. That's really Konkin's major contribution.
So it's making, you want to get rid of the system, don't try and take over the ramparts and be in charge of the marble monuments, just, you know, compete, you know, make them obsolete, do something else.
Exactly. Separate, do your own thing, let them fall of their own weight.
You know, that used to be, as I remember coming up, I don't know what kind of wave of religion you went through, if any, but, you know, from my perspective, coming up in the 90s, I mean, I'm sorry, in the 70s and so on, going to high school and such, it wasn't until after the Reagan election that you kind of, you know, got this Christian right, born again, that, you know, Christians would get involved in politics. Up to that time, it was kind of a separation thing, you know, live by example, influence by example, make sure that you set a standard, you know, change the culture, quit worrying about pot. And then it got the, oh, no. If you don't get involved in politics, vote Republican, you're going to go to hell, you know?
Right.
So
right.
That
you know, the Bible actually is gigantic on separation from end to end. Abraham has to leave his house and his family. Moses has to come out of Egypt. He has to bring the people with him. Jesus goes up into the wilderness. He wants them to be a holy and separate people. I mean, you know, it's just end to end in the Bible.
Yeah, that was the impression. I talked to Pastor Chuck Baldwin about this because he was part of the Christian right, the silent majority, whatever, you know.
Right.
And he went through this. That was his cutting his teeth on, you know, politicking kind of in the 80s thing. And he saw it. He's like, from up close and personal, he shared with me, yeah, it was just all a politics thing and of the devil, you know. So he's separated totally from, I don't do the 501c, I have nothing to do with government, we're not, you know, heck no. And I'm seeing this as the real solution. You know, that's one thing I wanted to talk to you about today. And for someone like, you know, McAfee to come up and call BS on, it's really not even, he's gone that far yet, but I think he'll expose some stuff. What do you think he's going to bring up? What's going to be of interest?
You know, it depends how much attention he gets, but anytime he's going to be talking about surveillance and things like that, he'll be very good, I think, at educating people. He certainly has a good background. He understands computers. He understands the way the internet works. I think he'll be very good at educating on that. And, you know, separation, I think, really is the right strategy, but you know, most people are deep inside the system, and sometimes they need to see somebody say, look, this is wrong. This is bad. This is self-contradictory. They're violating what they're supposed to stand for. And, you know, people need to see that sometimes to kind of shake them up.
Yeah, I don't know if they haven't seen it yet, man. I mean,
well, you got a point.
I mean, damn. You know, it's going to be a separation of the 5% and went over here and just let the, you know, the Titanic sink and we made rafts out of doors or something. I mean, you know,
right.
You know, which always amazed me. You know, a couple hours I'm going, I don't know, it looked like a lot of wood that was there, man. I just tie them together something. I mean, come on. But so it's, you know, you're waiting around for someone to save you. You go down with a ship. That's what happens.
You sure do.
So this is, when we come back, you know, we'll go ahead and kind of hit some highlights of what we want to talk about. Because my thing with McAfee, I didn't know his history. I was not paying attention, too young, too out of the loop, whatever. And he comes on, and some of the things we're talking about, I said, you know what? We need to talk to Paul Rosenberg. I guarantee he knows some history on this and what can be done and where the real threats are. Well, we're going to talk about it here today on Declare Your Independence. Paul Rosenberg, crypto hippie himself. We'll be right back.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened.
How are you, Paul?
I'm well, thank you.
Let's go ahead and make some notes on what we want to get out today. There's How are you on, you know, current events? I mean, you know, we got the finance, we got the war, we got, you know, all kinds of stuff. And I'm just wondering, you got a comment on
it? I'm not too bad. I mean, I don't follow the details closely, but I pretty well know what's going on.
Good. You can explain it to me.
I'll do my best.
Because this Syria thing, I mean, they're wanting to do a war. You know, this weekend I took off, didn't check it. We had people visiting. Tim Fry from Roberts & Roberts was moving.
Right. Uh-huh.
Megan, you know, which is joining Airbits, came by. And our IT guy, Derek from Maine, came in. And mm-hmm. Drew from Bitcoin Not Bombs. And we all kind of, you know, plotted the salvation of the universe, you know, over the weekend.
Good.
I'm not sure what to expect other than a lot of times the only thing that I'm not surprised at is that I get surprised. I mean, I used to think, you know, nothing surprises me anymore. And then when you get older and you kind of think that you've seen the envelope they operate in, and all of a sudden it's black swan government stuff, you know, and I'm going, man, they'll stop at nothing, you know? So
yeah,
I'm just wondering if you got any views on what some of the nothings are.
Yeah, well, you know, it's give me the macro view stuff, and I think I can contribute something.
All right, we'll go ahead and do that. The I wanted to get some. If you're familiar with McAfee in his early days and McAfee virus and what it went, because I thought McAfee. I even asked him on there. I'm just going, you know, how close are you into the McAfee that's now? None, nothing. I don't have
right.
This as my name. So I go, good, because it sucks, man. Because I,
it does.
You know, and it went down. So I'm wondering his early history, what he came up with and why. If you could explain, you know, that
sure.
And why. Do you know his announced VP guy? Do you remember? Do you get a look at that?
No, I didn't. Who did he?
Yeah, I forgot. And I'm just, you know, I'll look it up here. Here, let me look it up now. We've come back, because it might have been someone you know also. He was making a big deal out of it. Here we go.
Okay.
What's up next? Visit the Liberty Radio Network program guide to find out at shows.lrn.fm. That's shows.lrn.fm.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Okay, John McAfee's running mate, it says, I go, where do I look on there? I go up on the internet and ask, and it goes to Freedom's Phoenix, and it says he announced it, and I got to listen to the damn show. I'm such a butthead, man. I got to put that anyway, so we'll find out who it was. It was a, you know, some other uber geek from the 90s and so on, and all you guys. So I'm just like, that's an interesting ticket. I'll go ahead and we'll get it before the end of the show here. But, you know, the main thing that I'm looking at is the history of McAfee. Why would he be, interested even doing it, and the capability, the things that he would bring up? Let's get a little history on John McAfee. When did he come to your attention, Paul?
I learned about McAfee some point in the 90s. He was, you know, a programmer, a bright guy. At that point, you know, the internet was still beginning in those days, at least in terms of popular use. And, you know, you had the first few schmucks on there who were trying to break into other people's computers. It wasn't terribly hard because they really weren't built for security. I mean, most of the stuff was being done by a fairly small community of college students, you know, kind of libertarian sort of people, and they really didn't think about, you know, the bad guys of the world. So once some of the, you know, the usual schmucks started making problems, McAfee, among others, decided, you know what, I know how to fix this. I'm pretty good at this computer stuff, and I know how the Internet works, and I know how computers work. You know, there's all kinds of details about inner details that most people don't see, which ports are used, you know, which ones in what order, and various stuff. And he knew all that stuff. And so he came up with a very clever piece of software that protected your computer from people getting into it without you wanting them to. And it worked pretty effectively, and pretty quickly people wanted it, and it did very well. And then at some point, and I don't know the details on this, as it became a bigger and bigger deal, and he was one of the first and one of the most well-known, some, you know, megacorp bought him out. And then I lost track of McAfee. He just kind of vanished.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. He made an interesting revelation. He went to Belize just to be left alone and chill. He's there for a few years. I think he was there a total of 4 years or so. He kind of bounced around from, I don't know, party to orgy to another party or something. And he's having a good time. He's like, hey, man, you know, I got mine. So Belize, it was election season. A politician came up to him and said, hey, we got all kinds of land, we'll give you all kinds of deal, hot and cold running women, whatever you want and everything, I'll be, $2 million, you know, for the privilege. And he goes, nah, not interested, don't play politics, not interested. Well, it's like the next day, 40 guys show up, kill his dog in front of him, go through everything, say, you know, I'm sorry, mistaken identity. And so the same politician comes the next day or so and says, oh, I'm so sorry. It was a mistake. I'm sorry. How's that $2 million coming? And get the F out of my house. Well, then like a week later, there was a murder in his neighborhood, or they murdered him or something, and they wanted to pin it on him and bring him in for a questioning. Well, their form of questioning is hanging you upside down, putting a football helmet on you, and then beating it with a baseball bat. So it doesn't leave a mark, but it turns your brain to mush. And he goes, you know what? I'm not up for that kind of questioning. So he left the country and then, you know, got some attention and whatever. He gets extradited back to the U.S. and kind of, you know, and saved. So I think he went to Tennessee or something, and something just pissed him off. I'm back in America, and damn it. So he, a lot of people encouraged him to run, that they would do certain things. I was trying to get out of him how much understanding he had for ballot access, because I know what it is for doing it.
Right,
you
that's
know,
not
independent.
Easy.
So I'm going, well, I hope you got a lot of money, because it's going to be like $10 million just to get on the ballot, you know?
Yeah.
So that's where I left it with him, but I was going, okay, if he's serious, you know, he had a lot of names and guys got a little bit of money, or put a little money in some money. And I'm going, all right, if you want to get enough electoral college votes to even have a chance of winning, you got to get on so many states. I don't know if you got to get on every state, but, you know, this is going to be a chore. The man has made it difficult for someone like him to do exactly what he's doing, but what do we have coming up at Christmas? Oliver Stone's Snowden movie. You know, we have
right.
Surveillance is a big giant thing all everywhere. The POTUS election cycle is boring. I mean, it's not boring, but it is just, you know, nobody's going to save us, you know.
Right.
So what do you think about the Democrat? This is one thing. I go like this. Until Jeb or Hillary drop out, I'm going, nope, it's Jeb Hillary. Yeah, but Trump, Jeb Hillary. Well, look at Hillary. She's going to come out because of the Bengali, Jeb Hillary, you know. So I'm just, so far, it looks like I didn't watch a damn bit of news all weekend. I took off. We had, you know, friends visiting and saving the planet and sitting around the campfire of we're going to fix it. And all things
kind of nice to take a break from it, isn't it?
Hell yeah. Hell, oh, well, yeah. You know, it's Friday. I had a new grandbaby. So that's, that's my number 10 I've been counting. So I'm going, Colton James, you know, so I'm like, all right, cool. So that worked out well. So my weekend was all grandbabying and partying and chilling. So I'm just going to get right back to it. How should I do that? Paul Rosenberg. Okay? So you watch the news so I didn't have to. So we'll go through some of the stuff. One, you know, Hillary's Benghazi thing. You been paying attention at all?
I did. I missed the details on it. I mean, on purpose, you know. I find it, you know, contrary to my basic sense of life to watch too much of that stuff. But evidently she did quite well in the day after the Benghazi thing. Her all kinds of money flooded into her. I think a lot of people were waiting to see if she did okay in this thing, and evidently she did well, and all of a sudden money was piling into her campaign. So I think Hillary is fairly well a lock for the blues.
Oh, she's got, I've been through the Clintons with blue dresses, man. I mean, are you kidding me? Hell, he got impeached and he came out better. You know?
I know. And look, everyone knows this woman is corrupt. I mean, you know, we all remember the cattle futures. I mean, come on. She made $100,000 in a couple of months and never traded again because she read the Wall Street Journal. I mean, really?
Yeah. What was that? The white something?
Well, it was the cattle futures thing even before Whitewater.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I remember when Whitewater came out, that was part of the narrative of, you know, going back and her making money. It was a payoff, you know, when they were at her law firm that she did when he was something. I mean, you know, it's a long string of these. And I saw a Clinton, Hillary Clinton, you know, documentary that they have from a bunch of people that were staff and politicians. I mean, hell, I got Sam Donaldson up there ragging on them, you know. So I'm just going... This, I'm going, yeah, I remember all they strung them together, and I'm going, yeah, what are you going to do? Tell me she's really, 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 really bad? I mean, you know, seriously. So this has been Benghazi. I saw it happen in the first, it was Thursday, we did Trump Report with Dr. Tamburi, and during that breaks, we're watching the Benghazi hearing. It was a campaign commercial for Hillary. You know, I'm going, oh, the Republicans better, oh. The FBI thing. Oh, I'll bring that up, you know, when we come back. More Paul Rosenberg when we come back. Yeah, what I want to do is the, what they did is the, like, week building up to it, they pulled out some statute that says if you use FBI files for political purpose, you are guilty of treason. Okay?
Yeah.
So then they have these legislators, like, I won't get some, we didn't have FBI, we got to, oh, go ahead. We'll get you for treason. Of course, the Clinton White House is using FBI files left and right, which is probably why they did that. And then she's going to use it against other people on her. I mean, you can't make this stuff up.
I mean, you know, was it 900 some FBI files they found in the private quarters of the White House? Oops, it was just a minor bureaucratic snafu. You know.
And so then they passed law. Now they're using the law they did on that or something to get you for treason against anybody using files against them.
Yeah.
And I'm going, wow, man, this is, they got to make a movie about her, you know? So this is what we have on the left. And I know they were just waiting to see if she was going to fold under the pressure of, and she turned it into a campaign commercial. And once I could see that happen in the first day, I go, yep, I already see where this is going.
Yeah.
You know, they're not going to come up with any smoking gun that she's not going to deflect if I'm freaking crazy. Okay.
You know, if there was going to be some indictment or something like that, Biden would be running, and he's not.
Yeah, he was. What was interesting was he pulled his name before the Benghazi hearing started.
Right.
You know, and that was somebody knew something of something. And
oh yeah,
this is. Did you ever see the Netflix show with Kevin Spacey, House of Cards?
No, I don't believe I have.
Oh God, you know it'll piss you off or something. But I mean, Kevin Spacey plays a majority whip that moves up, and eventually, after a couple seasons, he becomes president of the United States. And it's through all this stuff. Well, Robin Wright, you know, who was Jenny in Forrest Gump, plays his
Princess Buttercup.
Exactly, plays his wife. Okay, and they're a team. Kevin Spacey and Robin Wright, all the more reason, no more other reason you need to watch the damn thing. And it's just how freaking, and when you look at this, you got to think, you know, I wish it was only that corrupt, you know?
Yeah, I know.
And they even got up to Putin and Syria kind of thing. I mean, he had their Russian Putin character, and they predicted a bunch of this stuff. It's like they're paying attention and then just seeing where this evolves, and they do the series, and they dump like 13 episodes all at once, and then you're done over the weekend, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
But it's Netflix. They're going to come out, I think it's in like February, and it's going to be right in the middle of the fray. And it's, if you even watched one episode, it's called House of Cards. Do you have Netflix or anything?
I used to. I don't have it now, but it's not hard to get.
House of Cards. And that'll,
I've heard of it.
Yeah, it'll piss you off or what. I mean, you look at it and you go, and it's kind of Kevin Spacey talks to the camera every now and then, you know?
Okay. Well, he's a good actor.
Oh, you don't need to watch the debates. You just need to watch House of Cards.
Okay.
Seriously. You know, it's
and
like,
I'm sure
why?
It's a lot more entertaining.
Yeah, it's kind of scary. You know, it's just, you know, especially, it's a report. And everybody dies. I mean, you know, it's like a Clinton White House went through.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Arkansas, don't we remember these?
Right. This is kind of my point. I mean, everybody dies, you know, and that's kind of the point they're making, I'm sure. All right, here we go.
Okay.
If you enjoy LRN.FM, please contribute to your favorite shows via their websites and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and Paul Rosenberg, all things American and international, and we're going to get to everything. The one thing I left it on, I promised I'd talk about, was the Clinton administration had FBI files, you know, that I got the impression they're not supposed to have. I mean, the president, hey, I'm the president, I can get whatever the hell I want. So this, coming out of that, they passed laws and made big kind of deal. You use FBI files for politics. It's treason! Treason! And they made a big deal out of this right before the Benghazi here, because there were some Republicans we got files right here that say, and kind of, really? Want to go to jail? Want to go to prison? You know, for treason? You know, then you're using FBI files for politicking. And I'm going, wow, man, these guys stop at nothing. And I'm going, you know, tell Paul, I said, he needs to watch Kevin Spacey and Robin Wright, the Netflix original series going into their third season, February they'll release or something, of House of Cards. And you go, yeah, it's just a trail of bodies. And, you know, Paul and I remember the bodies. So you think there's going to be more bodies, you know, piling up?
You know, I can't tell. They switch tactics from time to time. You know, Arkansas, which is where, you know, these bodies were you know, lining up in the 80s and even to the 90s, you know, it was kind of, at that time, kind of a backwater in terms of information. I mean, who heard about the news from Arkansas? You know, nobody. A few, local people knew something, but that was it, and it didn't make it to the national news. Whether there's still going to be bodies, you know, I don't know. I can't tell. These guys, they do what works, you know, what's convenient for them. But gosh, how many were there, Ernie, from Arkansas? It was over 50, wasn't it?
A bunch. You know, it was the Mena, Arkansas. There was some, you know, kid went by, happened to
That's
be
right.
flying his kite as he saw the plain land of the you're dead. I mean, you know, and the highway patrol of the girlfriend of the whatever, and somebody knew somebody that knew somebody.
Right, and they were flying cocaine in and out.
Yeah, this was the tie with the Bushes. And this is why I go Clinton Bush, Clinton Bush, Clinton Bush, because, you know, CIA director, head, whatever, Daddy Bush, you know, VP, still like your ex-CIA ever, and they're doing the Contra thing and, you know, running
right.
equipment down there, and they go, we got an empty plane. We should be, like, bringing back drugs and, you know, funding all this stuff. So it was just, and they're landing in Mena, Arkansas. It was so much money that the Clintons actually, for the state of Arkansas, created their own bank to launder it. And I'm going, wow, this is, I mean, you know, and now with the internet, it's very difficult to get away with this stuff. So you have to do it in plain sight. It's got to be like a big giant bank. So this is, I'm so we can expect a lot of interesting things. Well, like the McAfee thing coming out, you know, what do you think in the crypto space, if you were wanting to bring something to the attention of the American people, and certainly after post-Snowden and so on, we just have some new guys dumping on WikiLeaks a bunch of new stuff. I mean, Snowden was just the plug taken out of the dam. And I think that's how they see it. They're like, it wasn't like anything that, you know, they would have that he didn't make available to the press anyway. And that's
most kinda of his stuff was old stuff. It wasn't new stuff. You know, those of us in the business who've been paying attention, we kind of knew most of that stuff. We didn't know the names and the dates. But, you know, Snowden was wonderful, as far as I'm concerned, for making people aware of what's going on. It was nice for me because I was telling people about all these things, and I think they thought I was kind of a decent guy, but, you know, maybe I was eating too much of my own cooking. And here came Snowden, and all of a sudden I wasn't really nuts anymore.
I know. And, you know, the thing is, I never got the impression that people thought we were, they just, it was past their understanding, comprehension, go, yeah, of course, government's bad. But, you know, they go, no, they're not. No, they're not. So the argument was over how bad government wasn't, you know, or right, what degree or something. And this kind of stripped a lot of that away. I'm wondering, as we go into the, we're talking about Sam Konkin's concept and, you know, like alongside Night Novel and this Agora concept, and it kind of evolved out of the voluntarist movement from the Lovelution. It got new legs and people started living this way. It's a culture thing, and you've right, been right on the technological edge of that particular culture, and that's why, you know, I like, you know, having these conversations with you, because you kind of anticipated, predicted, been part of the resurrection of this whole, this is what you've been advocating, and here it comes. So, I mean, you know, how close are we? What do we need technologically to bring about the world that a lot of the crypto hippies were hoping for?
Well, we're at a point now where the existing system, by that I mean the big internet, Facebook, Google, NSA, all of that.
All the same
it's
thing.
Really in deep.
They're all the same thing. I mean, yeah.
Well, they're all connected. There's no question about that. I mean, the FBI used to have an office in Facebook headquarters. They probably have two or three of them now.
Oh, no, they wouldn't do that. That'd be wrong.
No, of course not, yeah. But the existing internet as it is, first of all, I tell people this, and it's absolutely true, and I mean this. I'm not being flamboyant. The internet is a surveillance system. That's what it is. You can still send messages to your friends over it, but that's what it is now. And so the existing system of the internet is really in deep, dire trouble. And there's stuff going on behind the scenes, the standards committees and things like that, that are pretty bad too. What we're really going to have to do is build our own. Computers now. I mean, you have a Windows machine, and you're, you know, it's a spy terminal. I mean, they almost say so. Windows is spyware. You know, the Windows 10 stuff, it's just abominable. Mac is following the same course more slowly, and there's all kinds of stuff going into computers now from the manufacturers that are abominable. I mean, I look at my partners at Crypto Hippie, and I say, we're going to have to start manufacturing computers one of these days because the stuff that's going into them now is just horrible. And we're going to have to start building our own internet networks. It's not hard to do. It's certainly easy to do on a local level, you know, but it's getting very, very bad, and we're going to have to get our butts in gear and start to build our own things.
Well, don't you think that's coming? I mean, that's what I've been screaming about.
Coming. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm feeling. There's a lot more stuff coming, and that's kind of what I'm advocating for. I'm just wondering what has been. Has there been active resistance, or is just convenience, or we got sucked into Facebook, and that came up this weekend. A lot of us discussing, you know, a lot of the guys coming together that have some skills, and It's I think we're at peak Facebook. I'm not really, I don't know. I mean, they're going to put up planes and add another 1-point-something billion to get on Facebook, you know, so we can control the peoples. And I'm wondering if there's enough of a resistance. That may be what John McAfee brings to this thing, is just making that kind of social networking uncool.
I hope so. I don't think that's going to happen. Facebook is immensely important to the entire intelligence and government complex. It's like it's coming to the level of like a central bank in importance. You have to understand with Facebook, they know what's going on at almost any moment in the minds of a couple of billion people. That's very, very valuable to them, especially since they have computers and whole warehouses full of computers that can take that information and get usable intel out of it. This is the greatest gift they've ever gotten.
The king has gotten inside our heads. It says, hello, I see what you're thinking. Hell, I know what you're going to think. I know what you want to buy. And I know who you're going to vote for. I know if you're not going to vote. I know what you're going to tell your children. We need to have more education up to 30 years old.
This is Donna Hancock with Silver Alliance Realty in Phoenix, Arizona, and I specialize in helping you find the real estate that fits your needs. Whether you are looking to purchase a home or a piece of land, whether it's in town or a rural setting, I can help you find exactly what you are looking for. Most of us are aware of the turbulent times ahead and will need to settle in a place that will suit our particular desires, not only to protect our families, but to thrive in the coming downturn of the economy. Unfortunately, that time is not in the future, but it is upon us, and if you are going to get ahead of the game, now is the time to prepare. Qualifying options for new loans are narrowing, the dollar is being devalued every day, and living expenses are on the rise. So I have created a useful tool on my webpage at DonnaHancock.com that will allow you to search for properties at your leisure that are of interest to you. Simply click on the Search MLS tab at the top of my webpage to begin your search today. Start preparing for your future, and when you are ready to move forward with your home or land buying purchase, we can work together to get you and your family ready to flourish. Feel free to call or text me at 602-828-1819. That's 602-828-1819, and let's get started today.
This is your Roberts & Roberts Brokerage Daily Precious Metals Update. In early trading Monday, gold is up $3 at $1,168 per ounce, and silver is up 10 cents at $15.97 per ounce. Bitcoin is currently trading at $284. Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, founded in 1977. When you're serious about precious metals, give us a call at 800-874-9760 or visit us online at rrbi.co.
Oh, yeah, that was one thing. Bitcoin took a jump. We're talking about that, and I'm going, why? And they were going, cash controls in China.
Could be.
So I'm going, okay, well, that might have something to do with it. I'm just, all unraveled. How have you done your planning, your economic? You have your Agora infrastructure of I'm going to be okay? I mean, what's your plan?
I do too many things, so I've got a lot of irons in the fire, and if one of them goes down, then I'm not in such bad shape. And I have my various savings. I don't have any money or very, very little in the stock market anymore just because it's a freaking casino, and it really shouldn't be valued what it is. When it crashes, I don't know. How it crashes, I don't know, but I can't trust it anymore, so I have most of my money out of that, and I have a lot of friends, and,
Yeah, I think the friend part probably better than most things,
You know what? I think it really is. People really underestimate the value of good friends and neighbors.
Yeah, that's, the neighbor thing, the only way that we've been able to see, because all our neighbors, they know. Matter of fact, Donna just put, they brought a Phantom drone had shipped here just to play with, and we got aerial of our place here. It's in the third hour of the archive. And
cool.
So you just playing, and they're, it's getting so where I can, wow, I could use this. I could land it. I'm a droner, yay. But the our neighbors, they see we had a party Friday night, and how they get to know me is the bumper stickers on my guest cars.
Ah, okay.
You know, and they're just, so they'll say something to me. They're, you know, every now and then, you know, we'll see, we're pleasant and so on. Oh, what do you think about, you know, all you got to do is go through four or five cars with, you know, the ones, you know, that have, you know, 16 bumper stickers on the back, you know. And
right.
You go through a few and you just have one here and one there. And they're just, it's interesting the questions as the years have gone by. And I know where they came from. It was the bumper stickers.
That's funny, but that makes perfect sense.
I also, they know. Here we go.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
From what?
I want to break free from your
lies. Lies, 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 lies. Let's see if we can get some truth. Paul Rosenberg. Paul Rosenberg. You know, I tell you what. Let's do a little bit about Mr. Paul Rosenberg. You need to know where you can go to get his goodies. I tell you this. Freeman's Perspective.com. Freeman's Perspective.com. You know, he knows a lot about a lot of stuff. I mean, he's published in freaking everywhere, anywhere that anybody with any kind of a freedom bent, you know, certainly knows where to go. Everywhere you go, you got Paul Rosenberg up there, and he's been very kind to give us some time. And I, because there's one thing, the theme I want to get to, certainly in the next hour, we'll get to it after we get through some of the current events and goodies, is the decentralized internet, you know, that be a coming. And that, to me, was what I thought was going to happen in the early 90s to begin with. And then you have new technology and so on. We have like Bitcoin starting to make a big giant leap in price. And we're going, what the heck was that about? Well, they're saying, you know, China is having cash controls. You know, they're going to, so we need more Bitcoin. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of reasons, excuses that they give. I want to get Paul's interpretation of that news. And then the memory hole. And I remember the memory hole. It was like, you know, it was launched in the early 2000, right after 9/11, as I remember. I thought it was even earlier than that. We had these where people would have information. They could see that there were, had the attempt of scrubbing the internet from certain, that's a danger. It's an archive. That's a danger of Freedom's Phoenix. It's a chronological 10-year, 200,000 article, mid-page. We got it here. You may take it down, but we got a reference to it and names and kind of, here it is, archive of na 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 na. So this is going to be very interesting, the ability to go 1984 and just change history because you control the present, which means you control the future. So I'm just going, yeah. So let's first talk about some of the people breaking free and your opinion on what's going on with Bitcoin, if you care.
Sure. Bitcoin. Wow. What a huge area to discuss. The price of Bitcoin is really a function of supply and demand. When more people want to get some Bitcoin, the price goes up. When fewer, it tends to go down. Right now, it's gone up in the last week or two. People are saying it has to do with Chinese capital controls, and I don't have any direct information on that, but that makes sense. I mean, when you have money and you want to get it out somewhere and they won't let you, well, Bitcoin is the answer because you can, all you need is an internet connection and you can send the value. You have to transfer it in and out of Bitcoin if you don't keep it there. And you can just send it and nobody can really stop it, unless, you know, that just can't really be stopped at the moment. So it's a great way to move some value if, you know, where you're living, they're getting all thuggish on you. So it may very well be true.
Yeah, because we went through this before. It was Cyprus.
Cyprus, price went up right then.
Yeah, I think it went up to like 1,200 or something. They're going, oh, we see what's wrong. You know, it's one thing about these digital currencies and Bitcoin in particular is that it keeps developing. It keeps, you know, up with the times. Every time they try, and there's always somebody with something to be able to get around their something. And I'm going, okay, that's what I need, is something that can you know, evolve past censorship. And that's kind of what the internet was. Help me understand this. In the early 90s, when I first started getting my first email and we went on email list and we're getting all this information, the way the decentralized internet that people keep threatening they're going to do with things like Alexandria or MadeSafe or Storage, or, you know, there's a lot of other ones starting to come online with this concept, I'm going, you know, that's how I thought the internet was going to was developing. And then the World Wide Web hit. From someone in your position, uber geeky at the time, did you see the trap of the World Wide Web, or did you welcome it? What were you thinking?
Well, you know, at the point, we're just trying to keep track of what was going on because so much was happening so fast. The internet was never, you know, we use the term decentralized, and it's fine. It's descriptive. It's not precisely true. The internet is distributed, not exactly decentralized, but whatever. It doesn't matter.
Let's spend a second on that, because this was the big thing that I kept having to come to terms with. Decentralized is you have, you know, cities on a map that have their own ecostructure, their own communication, their own whatever. Distributed is kind of like it all feeds back to Washington.
Well, distributed is that there are multiple centers of dependence. In other words, if I'm turning on my computer and I get onto the internet and I'm in wherever, I'm in Phoenix, I have to connect to a network, and that network has to connect to another network, and that network cooperates with 1,000 other networks. So I'm not a full node by myself. I'm not a full entity by myself. I'm connecting through other entities, and then those entities communicate amongst themselves, and the signals get back and forth wherever they need to go. If you were completely independent and you were a peer of every other network and every other node, that would be truly decentralized. What it is now is there are distributed centers of control. There's many of them. There's like 3,000 separate networks that make up the internet.
Okay, now that kind of describes the leap forward in Bitcoin technology. Is running a Bitcoin node makes you, you got the full ledger, and you can, I mean, of course, the accumulation of other computers that do that is what creates the hash rate, the power of securing the network. But it really is from a bunch of individual complete nodes that do that. It's kind of the concept, isn't it?
It sure is.
So we're getting more to this decentralized, and the closer you get to peer-to-peer, people may have heard, you know, I'm pulling files and pieces from individuals that have. I mean, so that concept, when the World Wide Web came online and they said, all right, where we're now, did you recognize the threat? Do you think it was a threat? Did you embrace the new abilities? I mean, what were you thinking back then?
Well, I embraced the new abilities big time. It really wasn't the World Wide Web by itself wasn't a threat. The model, the architecture of the whole thing really didn't change from that. Here's what happened. There were several different things that really made the problems that we have now. The internet was a genie let out of the bottle. There was a bunch of geeks in the back rooms, college kids, and, you know, using it to send, you know, silly messages back and forth half the time, sharing notes. And all of a sudden, boom, it's on the scene, and the powers that be realized pretty quickly that they had a problem. That once you had this system that really was kind of out of their control, and then you added encryption to it, well, damn, these people can do whatever they want, and we can't stop them. And if they ever get enough backbone to use encryption with some kind of digital money, well, we can't guarantee that we're going to collect the taxes anymore, and we can't control the information that goes into their heads. Mm-hmm. So they realized, at least by 95, that they had a very serious problem on their hands, and they went about to rein it back in. The first thing they did was to take over the independent ISPs, the local internet service providers. I mean, it wasn't always AT&T and Comcast and Verizon. There were a lot of little tiny local places that you would get your internet service from, and they came in very thuggish and very heavy-handedly and took them over, said, you will comply or else.
No, I remember these days, and it was, it was in 1993, it was SAFE, Second Amendment is for Everyone, was our first email account somebody got for you. You got to be on the internet, I got to get you some internet, you be on the internet. And it was SAFE, at indirect.com. That be, you know, got merged in with, you know, OnRamp, whatever, a bunch of modems in the back of a gun store somewhere, that then the Mountain Bells wouldn't give you, you know, new phone lines. Oh, we can't give you, can't, you're not allowed, can't, and us, and we'll, and give us a few years, and we'll get caught up, and then we'll do it, and kind of, we bought you, you know?
You were there, Ernie, you know.
I went through this. It was a consolidation of information flow like it always is, and because they were in the... I don't know, they were inside the regulatory capture area of this thing. They went ahead and they got what they wanted. And I just, you know, I saw it coming. All right, we'll be right back. More Paul Rosenberg next hour. Get into some nitty-gritty memory hole. Where'd all this stuff go? You know, this information, there was an attempt. I'm still waiting. I want to see where it all went and if I can still get access to it. We'll be right back. Paul Rosenberg, Crypto Hippie, Freeman'sPerspective.com. We'll be right back.
More Declare Your Independence is coming up next, live, after the news, here on the Liberty Radio Network, LRN.FM.
From Keene in the Shire, the Liberty Media capital of the world, this is Daryl W. Perry, host of FPP Radio News for Tuesday, October 27th, 2015. Silver is trading at $15.88 per ounce. Gold is valued at $1,166 per ounce. And according to BitcoinAverage.com, the average price of Bitcoin is $292. Antiwar.com reports Kurdish forces for the People's Protection Units, YPG, and the Free Syrian Army forces who were fighting alongside them reported they came repeatedly under fire from Turkish soldiers across the border into Tel Abyan, a town the Kurds recently seized from the Islamic State and absorbed into the Kobani Canton. According to the forces on the ground, they repeatedly came under brief machine gun fire from the Turkish side of the border, but did not return fire on the Turkish soldiers. Turkey has not directly addressed this report, but did hint at their involvement. Turkish President Erdogan blasted the YPG for its recent gains in his comments, vowing Turkey will do whatever is necessary and accusing the YPG of secretly being in league with the Islamic State, despite having taken territory directly from the Islamic State. Turkey has long opposed the growth of the YPG and complained bitterly about U.S. and Russian support for them against the Islamic State. Turkey appears to believe a larger YPG territory will add to secessionist sentiment in southeastern Turkey, where the Turkish military is carrying out a war against Kurdish separatists.
You can support FPP Radio by shopping online. Whether you're looking for precious metals, bitcoins, or books, you'll find that and more at shop.fppradio.com. Every purchase you make from one of my affiliates, like Namecheap and Amazon, at shop.fppradio.com helps fund FPP Radio. Or you can shop directly from FPP with Bitcoin in the Bitcoin store. That's shop.fppradio.com.
UPI reports congressional leaders and White House officials are reportedly nearing an agreement on a two-year budget as well as lifting the debt ceiling. Officials have until November 3rd to raise the debt limit before the U.S. Treasury says it will run out of money. The deadline to fund the federal government is December 3rd. Also under consideration are measures to fund highway and infrastructure construction, which must be renewed by the end of the week, and renew the Export-Import Bank for another year after it lapsed over the summer. Under current negotiations for the budget deal, defense and non-defense spending would get a boost of $50 billion in 2016 and $30 billion in 2017. Additionally, there would be a cap imposed on premium increases for Medicare Part B beneficiaries. Assuming the budget deal can be voted on this week in the House, it will pass only with overwhelming Democratic support. House Republicans are unlikely to support a compromise agreement. A deal would eliminate the issue of a government shutdown.
For over 35 years, Robertson Roberts has been a trusted source for buying and selling your investment-grade precious metals. They also take Bitcoin for precious metal purchases and permanently removed the minimum purchase order for all orders paid in the digital currency. Call Robertson Roberts today for knowledgeable advice on investing and a forward-thinking approach to new technologies. 850-478-5270 or online at rrbi.co.
Reuters reports under new rules to be considered by transportation officials in Sacramento, loud, smelly people could be asked to leave buses and light rail trains. The proposals come as Sacramento enjoys a downtown building boom that will eventually add a high-end basketball arena and a soccer stadium, amenities that officials hope will draw patrons to the area by light rail, bus, or train. A spokeswoman for the Sacramento Regional Transit District said, if we can make it more attractive or make it more enjoyable to use the light rail or bus, then people are more apt to use it. Under the proposed ordinance, passengers will no longer be allowed to get on a bus or train unless they are covered, quote, above and below the waist and also wearing shoes. They will be banned from emitting a noxious odor unless the smell is related to a disability or a medical condition. Passengers will not be allowed to play sound equipment that is audible to other passengers and will be banned from sleeping on a train that has reached the end of its line. Those who refuse to comply could be kicked off the bus or train. But advocates for disadvantaged Sacramentans said the regulations were a swipe at homeless people who have a right to ride buses and trains. Pam Haney, advocacy coordinator for Wellsprings Women's Center in Sacramento, told the Sacramento Bee newspaper that she doubts anyone would be kicked off the bus for wearing too much high-end perfume. This has been FPP Radio News, online at fppradio.com.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. I'm here in the Stancock here in Phoenix, Arizona. Hello, hello, hello from the beautiful studios of Freedom's with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. I'll get to it next hour. I'll really do it. All right. Now, we're talking to Paul Rosenberg, and I just had Donna send him, I'll check with him, see if he got it, just sent you an article on Freedom's Phoenix to where they are, the government is claiming we rule you and Bitcoin, and we're going to get some, and the FBI's got rules and everything on how they're going to do it. And I'm just going, wow, this is the beginning. Government sees the opportunity to control Bitcoin, and they have policies, and they talk about how they're going to get it and who they get it from and the conditions in which they seize, and they say seize, but they really, they in the article, they understand that, well, we may not be able to actually spend it or get it or whatever. You know, so I'm wondering, you know, the government... blockchain technology, and certainly Bitcoin in particular, has really as a big giant attack on them. And there was an article I remember had a big influence on me in the late 80s called From Crossbows to Cryptography. And it was like 87, 88. And it predicted this. Are you familiar with that article, Paul?
You know, I'm not sure I am, Ernie. Sounds like a great article. I don't recall it right off.
Satoshi Nakamoto Institute or something had those guys on to go, oh, yeah, that was a big deal. It was 87, From Crossbows to Cryptography. And the point they were making was is they didn't want the peasants to be able to have crossbows because it made them easy for them to take out their knights with their armor. So it made the government, you know, power irrelevant, you know, and they're just like, damn peasants, they're out there spending their own money and stuff. So this is, it's happening right now on top of Freedom's Phoenix. I was just taking a look. Yep, there it is. You know, they're coming after it. But I wanted to talk in this hour more about the history of the internet. That's one thing we had a lot of the guys over this weekend were, you know, saving the planet and such. The one thing that we were really emphasizing on was the ability to maintain data. You know, there's always, it's always getting changed or going down the memory hole. It's a, you know, prediction of Big Brother doing exactly this. Was that something that you guys were concerned with back in the day?
Oh, yeah, of course. Very definitely. You know, the internet was the first break around the information monopoly. You know, when you and I were kids, we had, you know, ABC, NBC, CBS, and New York Times and a few other major papers, and that was it. And they were pretty much homogenized. Then came the internet, and it just broke down the walls. You know, the maniacs could talk amongst themselves.
You know, if we wanted data, let's say we did a show, we had a news clip, we did something, we just wanted to have the video because we knew it was never going to be saved by anyone. This was before, you know, the internet started getting going. So it's early, mid-90s and so on. We had to pay $35 to $65 per segment of a company by FCC regulations. They had to archive the news footage somewhere, and you could go and buy it. So if you bought a half hour of a television news station, you know, program, you would go and you had to pay money and you would get the tape. That was the only way we ever got anything. Now you just, you know, click.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
So that made a big difference. Well, tell me about the memory hole, you know, in history, you know, 1984, what he's talking about, and how that evolved and where is it now?
Sure. The memory hole in the novel 1984 was where you took news that was now no longer politically convenient, and it was Winston Smith, the main character, is one of his jobs to take things that are inconvenient and get rid of them, to erase them as if they never happened. And what they would do is they would take whatever papers or whatever they had, and they would stick it through a little slot. It sounded like it was kind of like the mail slots in the old office buildings, where you know, just go down the hall and slide the mail down the slot, and would go into the mailbox in the basement. It was the memory hole, and you would stick it down there, and it would go directly to an incinerator, and it was gone. It never happened. History was changed. History was erased.
Yeah, it came in like
all the time,
like a bank vacuum tube.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
boom,
exactly.
There it is, and it's gone. You know,
listen, you know, and it happens all the time. I like to tell a story that I knew the guy who had to remove the Armenian genocide from American textbooks.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Genocide, which is Turkey, right?
Right. In 1915, in the area surrounding that, the Ottoman Turks killed one point however many Armenians. I mean, purposefully killed them, sadistically.
Right after they got their guns.
Yeah, right. And they had, yeah, and they had a little bit of the Joseph Mengele stuff going on. I mean, it was a very, very nasty deal. And I'll give you quickly my friend's story. You know, I worked in the publishing business for a long time. In one little area of it, but still I was in the business. And I had an editor who, we had a meeting once and discussed the projects we were going to have. And then we got to talking about stuff, and he had been working for one of the big three textbook companies. And he was working on a high school history book, you know, editing it, putting it together. And he got a phone call one day. I get the impression this was in the 70s or early 80s at the latest. From the U.S. State Department, and said, I'm so-and-so, and I want to talk to you about, you know, the history book you're editing. You know, it's like, really? You know who I am? You know what I'm working on? Huh? And he said, we need you to take out the part on the Armenian genocide. And he says, well, it happened. It was a big deal. He says, yeah, we know it happened. We believe you. But, you know, we need to keep the Turks happy for our, you know, mega political aims. And we need them happy, and they're going to be ticked off if you put this in the American high school textbooks, and we need you to take it out.
And oh, okay.
Yeah, so he protested. He's a good man. He protested, and he ended up being able to keep two or three paragraphs when it should have been two or three pages, and that was a major triumph that he kept those paragraphs.
Just that it even freaking happened. You know, so they didn't want to... This is,
you know, governments always, they have to do this. I mean, most people, you know, think that politics is just what it is, but there are people who understand that you have to control the information. You have to control the minds of the populace. I mean, that's That's what monuments are for God's sake. This has always been what's going on, and it's what's going on now.
You know, Mount Rushmore, I really never really appreciated what a freaking doink in the eye to the Native Americans that was. You know?
Yeah, it must have been, yeah.
Until you go to see Crazy Horse, you know, they did the whole point of them doing this big, giant Crazy Horse, you know, my land is where my people lie buried kind of thing. And right on one of their, you know, sacred mountain of granite of, you're going to put the four guys that rule you, you know? And I'm going, wow, what a statement of government. And they do the same things now in different ways. They just create a, you know, Fox News network. So I'm going, this is the memory hole, as the website, as I remember, it was kind of where things went to not die, you know?
It was like WikiLeaks before WikiLeaks.
Right.
It was different in its way, but yeah, it was a place where people posted real information that would never get reported on, you know, ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN.
And when we come back, we'll find out what happened to it. It kind of went to somebody that bought somebody, did something, and kind of, you know, Freedom's Phoenix, you know, bite me. So here we're reliving history over all this stuff you think is new. Nah, it's just how they do it. We're going to find out more how they do it from Paul Rosenberg. When we come back, we'll be back in just a little bit.
When it comes to investing in precious metals, you need a source you can trust who offers you choices and empowers you to maximize your wealth. That's where Roberts & Roberts Brokerage can help. Roberts & Roberts is a trusted name in precious metals. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts has been providing you with the finest gold and silver bullion, coins, rounds, and bars at genuine and honest prices. They make it easy to invest in precious metals and work with you to suit your investment needs. In addition to offering gold and silver for sale for U.S. dollars, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage is now accepting Bitcoin in exchange for their quality precious metals products. To speak with a professional from Roberts & Roberts about investing in precious metals, call toll-free 800-874-9760. Write this number down, 800-874-9760. Visit Roberts & Roberts online at rrbi.co. That's rrbi.co. On behalf of Roberts & Roberts, here's hoping your day is as good as gold.
Paul, there's a wiki thing on the memory hole. I'm going to read that paragraph about the memory hole. I think that's interesting, and then
get
you to comment on that. Because this is, I did not know they got hacked out of existence or whatever. I was wondering what happened.
I don't know all the details on it.
Well, it's just, it'd take me 90 seconds, and then we'll know.
Okay.
But we'll do that. And then, after this segment in the last half hour, we'll mention, you know, Israeli coverage or something. We'll just mention that and go as deep as you want and whatever, and just, you know, keep it positive kind of thing. And then, of course, you have anything to say since we're going to have Irwin on Peter about his dad, Irwin. I wonder if you want to have anything to say about Irwin Schiff and your experience or knowledge of that.
You know, I never knew Irwin. I know I've met Peter at some shows, once or twice. We've been on a panel or two together or something.
His dad was one of those guys that, you ever meet some of the guys that will go, yeah, but the government, and the capital letters of the IRS and and the gold fringe of, you know, damn it, and I'm right and they're wrong, and I'll sit here in jail for the rest of my life and I don't care, and suck it. You know?
Well, you know, let's talk about that a little bit because I think it's an important thing. I've had friends that were tax protesters and who, had their everything seized and almost went to jail and everything else. And I told them beforehand not to do it, and I told them why. But, God bless them. They're kind of pure in heart over it, but it's...
Yeah,
it's
Peter, when he spoke at our Freedom Summit in 04, I think it was. What year was it? 05. In 05... he spoke when we did it in Manchester, and as we talked to him about his father, we had met him and knew his dad and respected him and so on, and Vince Aprenowitz, been writing about him and knew him and what had happened and them banning him be able to sell his book or something. I mean, when all that was going on, we're like, damn. Well, Peter was kind of, embarrassed about his dad. He's like, I told him not to. But so you're never a prophet in your own land, you know. But now at least we'll see. We'll be talking about it today. All right, here we go.
You're listening to the best liberty-oriented audio streamed around the clock, on the air and online. This is the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
To be a part of the show, call 602 602- 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Talk about, you know, we'll get into a little bit of, you know, the people that we know like Irwin Schiff. We're going to be talking to Peter Schiff in the next hour, and we're going to, you know, kind of bring in, you know, but we've known people. If you're in the movement at all, you know, certainly Paul and I, you know, I've come across people that's a prince. Man, hell no. Would you be more effective if you, like, weren't in jail? No, doesn't matter. Somebody's got to, you know, set the standard of, I'm not going to capitulate. That is their win. I know a lot of people like this, and they will go to their grave, freaking, we are not, which is, you know, very commendable. You just got to, you know, it's diversity. You know, it's a distributed everybody according to their whatever. You know, so we'll talk about that. But, you know, the memory hole, I wanted to do a quickie on this. Paul's going to let me read this one little bit here quick, and you'll kind of get the idea. The memory hole was a website edited by Russ Kick. Now, it was first launched in July of 2002. The last post was on May 2009. So it went for, what, 7 years there? Before being hacked in June of 2009, the site was devoted to preserving and publishing material that is in danger of being lost, hard to find, or is not widely known. Topics include government files, corporate memos, court documents, police reports, and eyewitness statements, congressional testimony, reports from various sources, maps, patents, web pages, photographs, video, sound recordings, news articles, and books. The name is a tribute to the memory hole from George Orwell's novel 1984, a slot into which government officials deposit politically inconvenient documents and records for destruction. One of the most noticeable actions was the publication of several hundred photos depicting the coffins of U.S. soldiers fallen in Iraq. I remember this. These were obtained by Russ Kick by filing a request based on the Freedom of Information Act. The photos sparked a controversy regarding the publication of war photos, public opinion, and the behavior of the U.S. government. The website is a 2005 winner of the Project on Government Oversight's Beyond the Headlines Award. So that's what I remember, that when they had in the C-130s or something, all these flag-draped coffins that were coming back from Iraq. That was one thing that they were not showing, is like in Vietnam, all these dead bodies and bags coming back by the gazillions, and they just knew better. They said, no, we don't show it. It's only heroes. Heroes. No dead zeros. We're going to, you know, do it that way. And by publishing this and doing a memory hole, the government went, we got to get a hold of this. This is no, hell no. And it's been a battle ever since. Did you anticipate that battle coming, of this memory control of all humanity's recording of government's misdeeds, Paul?
Yeah, sadly, yes. It's just something that they always do. You know, people don't appreciate the role of legitimacy in governance. You know, you've got a group of rulers of whatever flavor, and they rule by force and by threat. I mean, nobody pays their taxes willingly. But the bigger part of it is not just the force aspect, it's its legitimacy, that you're supposed to believe, well, of course we do this because that's what all good people do. It's the
fair
right
share
thing. It's the will of God. It's the will of the majority. Whatever it is, you need people to obey willingly if you want to run an efficient government. And once you have, you know, real information that goes against the grain, it's only a matter of time before they come against it.
No, you can see it, you know, the success of it come when you talk to people and they'll say things like, well, you got to pay your fair share. And I'm going, what the hell does that even mean? Where'd you get that? You know, what TV show is that on?
They remember and they get pats on the back for it. That's
right.
About it.
Right. So I'm just going, you know, I love the tax resistant movement. They go, do you file taxes? I pay everything of which I'm required, you know?
Right.
Every dime I'm required, that's exactly what you get on the form. Well, what's it? You really, and they just know better than that. Don't ask, man. Don't ask.
Right, don't ask.
Well, that's what libertarians running for office. You know, the guy who ran four times for governor here doesn't pay income tax. There's a couple of elections they tried to make a big deal out of. I'm glad you brought that up. Let's talk about it. And they're like, damn it. Didn't you get the memo? Never ask them that question, you know? So,
right.
You know, they want to go after. Well, let's talk about Irwin Schiff and the protest that he had against the IRS. I mean, the Mafia, I think, was the name of his most recent book. And they really went after him. And I am, and then we had Larkin Rose and his wife and what they had done. And all that, there's these people. Larkin was kind of more, you know, determined and had a long view of what's going to happen. And he started, tell the mirror, that video that Larkin did, Donna, send that to Paul, will you please? And he's working on a project on our funding center on Freedom's Phoenix. We've raised, I think, over $14,000 for him already.
Oh,
and
good.
And he's really, he learned for the last year, learned animation to create his own interactive cognitive dissonance go through program of I get it now. And he's working on this. And we just knew it was going to be a great project. You know, Larkin's going to go forward. But it's called The Mirror. I encourage everybody to go look that up. Put it up in the second hour show notes, will you please? And what happened is, that was a direct result of his progression from neocon, let's go get some, in the 90s, and him just being a principled guy, getting to that point. And I think he's been smart about it. He took the time in jail, you know, kind of write Iron Web and his books and so on. But there's a lot of guys, they just go down with the ship, and they could be more effective. I don't know. It's a personal opinion. What's been your experience with these kind of people?
Well, my experience is that, and by the way, I love a lot of Larkin's work. I really, really do. I've never seen the anti-tax stuff, so I don't know about that, but some of his other work, I adore it. Anyhow, my opinion is that, you know, these are basically, how shall I say, pure of heart sort of people. I mean, they really believe that, you know, the income tax wasn't properly ratified, it isn't properly encoded in law, and if we care about law, then this is wrong, and we have to say something and do it because it's really bad for people, and so on. And they may be right. There was some monkey business with the 16th Amendment being ratified, and, you know, I haven't examined the statutes myself. There may very well be a gap in there. The problem is that the people who enforce these laws really don't give a damn. They want the money. You got the money. They got the armed men, and they're going to take it. And that's the way it is. All of the laws and all everything else is just, you know, it's for show.
You know, that was one thing I liked in the movie Avatar. You know, towards the end, you know, there was a book, you know, it has, you know, the Na'vi or whatever, and the main character in the wheelchair, Jake Sully, or where he throws it, he goes, that's just how it works. You have crap that they want on your land, they just come take it, man, get over it, you know?
And I'm going, that is the way it works.
That is the way. So what we have to do is empower ourselves. How do we get empowered? Where does that empowerment come? Where are the mind traps that start to erode our power? How do you know? That's what we'll talk about when we come back. You know, maybe a little bit about the third rail Israel. You know, when we come back, Paul Rosenberg, just a little bit. Yeah, so we'll keep it light and just kind of doing the point that was being made and get over with and do
that. Oh, that's fine. Well, however you want to do it, Ernie, I'm with the program.
No, I'm yeah, I know. I was glad that you did. What happened? I'll tell you what the deal is. Stephen Lendman had been writing for Freedom Phoenix since like 06. I mean, he was retired. He came in, he wanted to do it. And my policy, if you look at the About Us, what we did is we go, you know what? I'm going to try and create a site that is the back. And that's kind of what we were talking about this weekend, the development in the back end of how we can, you know, continue what we're doing and emphasize the Freedom Forum and the comment section more and doing a bunch of stuff. Because I remember the internet, you could ask any question, certainly on a libertarian discuss list, and right, there was enough intelligent people there that everybody learned by getting the answer to that question. I mean, it was discussed. You understood it. You went on to the next thing. I was a big generator of a lot of questions. I'm like, man, learnify me. This was amazing to me. But then here come the trolls. And it was a campaign. You could tell these people were, you know, we find out later they called them coolers. You would go to a meeting or you'd be online and they go, yeah, but what about, you know, who'll build the roads or something, you know? So it's like, God, man, you getting a paycheck for this? I mean, you
some of them are now,
Yeah, if you're not, you should, because, I mean, damn, you know? So this is, I could see the impact of this. So we created Freedom's Phoenix in such a way that I could kind of, you know, it had to be from a publishing, editing policy of letting, as long as they were sincere, as long as they were looking, they were wanting to share their opinion with, you know, peace, go. I'm not going to censor. But that when they start getting ad hominem and they start just, you know, BS and they're trolling, you know, next. Well, Stephen fell into the category of sincere. He just wanted to, whatever. If I pull back or there's some, we didn't have a busy day or, we have, he gets all on it. There's some story in the media of Syria, whatever. Man, he's all over this Palestinian-Israel thing. So I kind of, you know, I don't want to censor. And then you, other people, but I can see what you were saying. It starts to feed on itself. And it starts.
It's an obsession. And it's a great question as to why. So there should be some real good psychological studies done on it. But it's a freaking obsession. They can't let it go.
Well, I tell you, we had our last breakfast club, it came up. There was it was an older guy. His name's Russ, and he was a pilot, and he actually flew the very plane that supposedly had went in one of the World Trade Centers. And so he knew that, you know, certainly the Pentagon, well, there was no way. He was, pilots against 9/11 or something like that. And wrote a book and all this other stuff. So he's really in it. He just knew that he was being lied to. Well, he gets in, and there are a lot of these, we have some young guys that go too, and he goes, yeah, well, you know, you guys don't talk enough about the Protocols of Zion. I mean, he went on, there's a list, this is right, I'm going, yeah, and, you know, I mean, okay, now the next step, and these young kids were, you know, okay, well, they went and looked it up, okay, I get it, and so this kind of mentality is, I mean, I don't want to make it to where it's not, I mean, I don't want to go memory hole, but it's just the attitude and the weight that we give this information, and the point that I was making, that I go, look, all that stuff is just supporting evidence. I'm going, yeah, the government's bad. It's bad. What are you going to do, tell me they're really bad? You know, so, all right, here we go.
While our satellite channel is free to listen to, it's not free for us. You can help us cover our satellite costs with a chip-in on the right side of the page at lrn.fm.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
There's something happening here. But what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Yeah, let's just take a looky-see and see what's up. What's up? What's up? You know, a lot of I like dealing with philosophical discussions and people that just been around, you know, since back in the day, because I remember the main thing to me was getting information, was having such smart minds available to me. I mean, you know, people you would never have the time to talk to, or they would get on various different libertarian lists, and libertarians freaking dominated what was the internet back in the 90s. It was the infrastructure, the sites, the idea, the concepts, the education that was going on. It was amazing. And I was learning so much. I was even learning how to spell. Because everybody go, hey, Ernie, man, damn, it's not T-H-E-R-E, it's T-H-E-I-R. Damn, you're killing me. And I'm going, oh, yeah, okay, thanks, man. You know, and then word processors came out and spell checkers, and I'm like, yeah, you're neat. And I never let my lack of spelling and grammar stop me from publishing a freaking website. I was not going to be afraid. I'm just going, we'll figure out what I mean, we'll get it done. So, I mean, it's a detriment and, whatever, but the point was is that it leveled the playing field for so many people to learn so many things and share a perspective, and we wanted to share from an activist perspective, and it's all about philosophy. It is that is the battle there. It's a psyop. We are up against just public opinion. So technologically, this capability that we had to do this, Paul Rosenberg is right in the freaking middle of that, seeing that this could happen. So tell us your experience with web lists, email lists, and the information that was available and you'd get, and then this phenomena of the troll. Where did that come from? Is that a new thing? Has that always been the coolers? How would you describe that?
Oh, great questions. First of all, the information was magnificent. I found myself, on that. I was like you. I found myself on these various lists, even the bulletin boards, before the internet was really there. I could ask questions about ancient Egypt to a real Egyptologist, and he was just a guy hanging out on a list. It was magnificent. It was tremendous. And there were, there are so many people who are smart guys and smart girls, who you just don't hear about. There are a lot of really brilliant people around who you never know about. But in the early days of the internet, when we had the mailing lists and we had all this other stuff, you could find them. And, they had wonderful things to say. Now it's kind of been taken over. Everyone's no one does mailing lists anymore. They do freaking Facebook. And they talk about, what kind of hamburger they had for lunch.
Yeah, but it's not. This is one thing that we had a big discussion this weekend, too. And I'm going, Facebook is not that kind of, even when you, especially if you have something interesting and things that are informative, and it's gone. It doesn't hit the news feed. You're not allowed to, you want to share that with all your friends? Well, that's another $20. I mean, I'm just going, no, I'm not going down that road. Hell no. That is not what I remember being the internet. I'm looking for this, decentralized options of it, never censor, can't go away. The memory hole is that. I mean, kind of thing. That is where we're going to do some ass whipping. I already know it. I lived it. I went through it. And so did you.
And then came the trolls. And, some of them were just kind of people with psychological hang-ups, shall we say, who just wanted to find fault in everything. And all of a sudden, here was the internet, and they could just, find fault with all sorts of people all the time. And we had people with that kind of unfortunate psychological bent that they really never fixed. But then came the other trolls, the professional trolls, and you must know about Cass Sunstein and all the work he did on it.
I don't. I tell you what I know. Okay. It was in 08 during the, we had been going for a few years. It was the Ron Paul thing. It was Obama running, and he had his own freaking paid staff of trolls that went into the White House run by Holder, man. I mean, these guys, you got serious about it.
Oh, government is paying for many, many, many paid trolls right now. Sunstein wrote papers on this. Sunstein was one of Obama's czars for some years. His wife, I think, is still some sort of mega, mega official inside the U.S. government. Her name is Samantha Power. And Sunstein, has worked for everybody. He's a big-time insider, works when he's not in government for law schools. And he wrote papers on how to get rid of conspiracy theories and the government should pay for trolls, essentially. And he wrote a book on it called Nudge, which is, kind of the smart guy way to get people to do what's the right thing for them, and called paternalism, and to get people to do the right thing without actually making them feel like they're forced, which is, Brave New World.
Public opinion.
Yeah, it's the same thing we keep going back to. So Sunstein was doing that, and there are all sorts of paid trolls. I mean, the U.S. Air Force was caught with them one time. I mean, you know, what does the U.S. Air Force need paid trolls for? But they had them, and still do. And, you know, so the Internet is full of paid trolls. Now, some of them are automated. They have programs where they've got machines doing it. So they've polluted, the commons.
Yeah, I mean, what's a better thing for a robot than Twitter? 140 yes. characters of just change opinion, and I have this to say about that, and wait till it comes up and do just a quick, you know, standard boilerplate of I rule your mind. I mean, I'm going, wow, this is wow.
And, I mean, the Snowden revelations were full of, you know, had that on it from GCHQ. They were doing this in, I think it was 2009. But they were teaching their operatives how it was done and how to do it and how to make people look stupid and, you know, on and on and on. And it's an old communist thing back from the old days when they did it, you know, manually.
Well, hell, freaking Voice of America was all right back at you. I mean, you know, it's the same thing. You know, this is GCHQ. I know it's British Intelligence, Pentagon, something, we rule you. What does that stand for? What is that?
It's the British NSA.
Okay. So, that means, like, the NSA is British, or the British is in it, they're all the same thing. I mean, you know.
Yeah, they're, you know, hand in glove.
So this is the concept that we get to the point. We saw this coming with the closed circuit televisions that are by the, in Great Britain, it's by the millions.
Oh, it's horrifying.
Millions. Nothing they don't see. Chicago, millions. I mean, you know, this is, we're, wow, this is. And it always these books and this rule and the empire of, and we got you, the Brave New World, all that, I mean, all this kind of stuff, 1984 in particular, is always V for Vendetta. It's always Great Britain. You know, I'm wondering why, because they're a really good example.
Well, they had a bunch of really good writers, for one thing. And they write, you know, that's why, you know, I end up writing newsletters. And I end up writing about the American stuff half the time, where I really would rather write about international, but I have the best figures and the best facts, and most of the new stuff is coming out of the U.S., whereas in 1940, a lot of it was still coming out of Great Britain.
You know, when we come back, we're going into the break here in a little bit, we'll touch on, you know, all the news, all things Israel. The third rail, Israel, you know, if you aren't able to criticize somebody, they rue you kind of deal. And I'm going, yeah, there's a lot of information. There's a lot of things there. There's a lot of weird kind of man you want to highlight. But it's not that that's a problem. It's not like you don't. It's just it's always with the negative waves, and it kind of feeds on each other, and it serves their purpose oftentimes. Certainly when Israel, see, we're the victims. You know, there's all the controversy. We need more money so we can buy more congressmen and get more money. Damn it. You know, and then, you know, we have the Middle East is just amping all this stuff. I'm just, how do you deal with that? Well, Paul has some ideas on it. We'll talk about it when we come back. Can I take a break real quick? And then when we come back, that's where we'll go, okay?
I will be here.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
The Eastern world, it is exploding. Violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war. What's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.
Yeah, we have even the Jordan River is bodies floating. And that, you know, what are they talking about? Well, it's a Middle East thing, you know. And here we have a story over the weekend. I just happened to see a headline, you know, Jordan maybe, you know, kind of leaning a little bit away from the United States' interest and more towards somebody else. We're losing control. Ruskies are taking over Syria. And God bless if, you know, we wanted to rule it. I mean, why? I don't care. But then that brings up a whole bunch of Israel stuff. Israel! If the Jews did it, if the Jews didn't do it, they're going to do it. I mean, I've been hearing this for decades. And I'm like, you know, what are you going to do? Tell me, like, governments are bad, they're really bad. And this is, and it got to the point, a crescendo, that even on Freedom's Phoenix, where we have people just, it gets, and I saw it, you know, I mean, I'm kind of, I don't want to censor it. I just kind of overwhelm it with tech and have some other perspective. But it got underneath Paul's craw enough that he said, you know, damn, what was your criticism? What are you looking to explain to the people, Paul?
Well, that several things, you know, it's a very complicated subject. But one is, this stuff is just obsession. You know, these guys get onto this stuff and they don't let go, and it leads nowhere good. I mean, first of all, you know, you're talking about this and we're getting all right back to where which person should rule and which group shouldn't rule, and who gets to enforce this upon the other one, and who do we want to bring down, and who do we want to support, and we're right back into the swamp of politics. We're right back into men ruling over men, and it's right that we do this, and authorizing violence, and hoping that this one ends up killing more of these than the other. And we're just right back into the same spiral. And, you know, for anybody who cares about liberty, this is a pit. It's quicksand. And to be, you know, to be very honest, it breeds hate. And I don't care how many people freak out over that. I'm sorry. It's true. It just always does.
You know, the one thing that we, of course, we look for opportunities to emphasize, you know, the other, but I remember there was a Facebook, all the more reason why we got to shut down this Facebook freedom of all your friends or your friends thing. Cause what did they do? There was some, you know, Jewish guy in Israel did a website that is, I love Iran, you know, and then Iran, yeah, and I love you. And I love, and all of a sudden, you know, big giant Facebook viral campaign of Generation Next all loved each other in the Middle East, and damn it, you know, they're not allowed. So I'm going, this is the kind of viral control that they're trying to stop. And whenever you get, but if it's a feeding frenzy and a boiling, freaking frothing pot of hate, oh, man, we just get it on Fox News. We're going to add to it, you know? So I understand right. that. I see it. And I'm just and I'm thinking, yeah, we want to skip a generation. We don't want to continue it back into the what. And I went through it living in the South in Florida as a kid with the racial stuff. And you could see it. And I was like, I tell you the thing that changed me, and just, you know, real quick story. Just my father had a service station, had a body shop and U-Haul and all kind of stuff. So I'm, you know, playing around there. In the back, it had, I was in charge of cleaning the bathrooms. I'm 6 to 12 years old, and I do the bathrooms, pump some gas, take care of the register kind of stuff in the summer and so on. And then one old guy that worked for my dad, Pops, he saw that I'm going into the back and using that restroom. And the reason was is because the men's room, I had to clean it. It was always greasy and dirty from the mechanics, and they left a mess for me all the time. I go to the back one, use that. It was always clean. Well, they're going, oh, he's using the colored bathroom. Okay. Oh, and yeah. I go, my dad goes, hey, you can't. I go, well, what makes him so special? How come they get the clean bathroom all the time? And my dad looked at me, and he's like, yeah, never mind. I mean, he wasn't going to win that one, you know? So,
right.
So I went through this kind of stuff and the illogic of it and so on. And I'm just thinking, we want kids going, why do I, what? You know, I love Iranians.
Yeah.
So
yeah, maybe most Iranians are decent people.
Yeah, no, we all have good experience. It's not, it's our governments. And I'm thinking that that's where we're going. The point that I recognize that you're trying to make is that, look, you know, what are you going to do? Say this raping, stealing, thieving, incarcerating, you know, taking, warring entity here is not as bad as that one. So we support that one. I mean, you know what? Seriously? So I'm really glad that you did that, and I wanted to show support for it.
Oh, well, I really appreciate it. And you're right. You know, I mean, Israel's a state. It's just like all the others. It does all the stupid things that all the others do, because that's what they do by their very structure. Yeah, but what about Turkmenistan? I mean, does anybody, and horrifying things go on there. Does anybody know? Of course not, because these guys don't pay attention to it. They pay attention to the one Well, they have whatever their reasons are.
Well, I tell you how corrosive this has been. This is, you know, the Palestinian Liberation Organization that's Palestine, and the issue of Palestine, we're going to push Israel out in Palestine, is this has been going on forever. And yeah. I'm just wondering, you know, it's bad. But one more reason why we shouldn't be involved. And our involvement keeps continuing this stuff because it benefits governments.
Yeah.
Hell, the UN was got credibility. The whole thing was this Israel. UN just loved them some Israel. Why? Because they got a UN out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a swamp. Politics makes everything ugly because at the end of the process, force is applied to make people obey. I mean, even if you have our, supposedly sacred democracies, when you get done voting, the 49% is forced to do what the 51% want them to do. That makes everything ugly. It just does.
Yeah, how's that working out for everybody?
Yeah.
I know. That's it. So before we go at the end here, you've always been a kind of a positive, glasses more than half full kind of guy. You know, what do you see? What's your predictions coming up? Things happening?
You know what? In my happy scenarios, we have some kind of separation. And you see a lot of it now. I was just at a wonderful conference in Europe where we had 200 or I don't know how many, but I would say easy 200 people who really got it. And they want to be separate. They want to do their own thing. They want to thrive in their own way, and they don't want to be controlled by anyone. They don't want to anybody telling what they must do or must not do. And they were decent, good people. I mean, these are the kind of people you want as your friends and neighbors, and they're just saying, you know, government and all of this other stuff, it's just nuts. And, you know, we're not trying to, you know, dismember it or anything, but we just want to be left alone. And, look, humanity has a wonderful future in front of us. We are so much better than we have been. We're living with Bronze Age institutions, and it is holding us back from the future. And I see more and more people who just want to say, you know what, that crap is 5,000 years old. Let's get the hell over it and move on to something better.
Well, here we have on top of Freedom's Phoenix, top few stories up there. It's CBS Las Vegas. They're doing this in Salt Lake City. There's a guy has his own country he's creating called Zakistan. Okay?
Okay.
And this is, you know, in Utah, and he just, you know, created his own little yellow and red flag, official looking passports and border patrol gate guarded by a giant robot sentry. And he's like, you know, it's going to happen. It's mine. It's the land of Zakistan, and which means something from nothing. You know, he's like, right. I'm here, and you know, everybody can just suck it. So I'm going, you do a bunch of, you know, and what do we do? We get it down to Zakistan, all the way down to Ernie Stan and Polly Stan, and we're just, you know, have our own stands. And
that's what happened when Rome fell apart. That's what we got.
And, well, we're seeing it. Here we go. You know, you see the cracks, and the cracks are, it's public opinion, and you want guys like Paul Rosenberg out there with the opinion of it's all positive. We're going to develop and evolve and information and communicate our way out of all of the crap. And one of the ways to do that is certainly be secure. And you can learn about that at secure.cryptohippie.com. Secure.cryptohippie.com. Freeman'sPerspective.com. Paul Rosenberg, always a pleasure to get his view on everything. Thanks, Paul.
My pleasure.
There we go. Thank you very much.
Oh, my, I enjoy doing it, Ernie.
I always feel better when I talk, especially after this weekend. This is perfect. Me get back on the radio from the weekend we did.
Oh, it sounds like it was a guess.
Yeah, it was. There's a lot of positive. I tell you what's really going to make a big difference. What happened is in the Bitcoin space, I was screaming about, you know, the grandma adjust button and all that stuff. Right. And when they came out with the Airbits, I go, oh, here we go. And one of the things that they did is when you have an Airbits wallet, you don't have to submit an email. you're creating an account using a password and, you know, a login, and then you have all these other security of 12 words of blah, 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 blah. And the reason is because if you lose your device, you know, then you can repopulate your new device with this encrypted packet of information with all your history, all your stuff, all your wallet, but you don't have to, they don't have it. They don't have the packet. If you don't write it down and you lose it, that's your freaking problem, okay?
Right.
So what that does is that creates the ability for you to be, you know, certainly more anonymous, and nobody, even if the NSA takes their servers, they get a bunch of encrypted data that they don't have the password to, don't know, don't care anyway. You know?
That's what Crypto Hippie does, yep.
Exactly. So I'm going, okay, so this is very cool. Then they're getting to the point now to where you have, you know, Verizon Virtual Assistant or Google, we back up everything, you know, for the NSA, and we'll let you have it too, you know, that kind of thing. So what they're doing is I can see they're going to start being like Carbonite or backup of your whole personal, of your medical records, of the doctor, of your history, of, you know, whatever, without identifying accounts. The man is not going to like this. And that's what's coming on so many levels.
Yeah.
So that's why, you know, I'm very enthusiastic about what they're doing and, you know, different things that are coming. So it's I know a lot of people are chomping, well, it's not here, it's not here, it's not here. I go, hell, man. The fact that it just started, really, for me, they're actually developing products and have this philosophy and people are of our mind, you know, within the last year and a half, I'm going, crap, man, that's... Hell, we already won. I'm just waiting for them to give me the app, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we got a lot of good people doing good things.
Oh, I got to tell you this before I let you go. There was this one guy we had on, God, what was it called? It was a dongle that was a homing systems. And what it is he has a USB dongle that goes into your home or office computer, and then around the world, you get direct access. They find each other on the internet through their cloud or whatever, and you get all uncensored access to your Hulu, Amazon, Netflix, because he was a uber-geek Chinese guy from Southern California. He goes to Shenzhen. He can't get his accounts. He goes, what the hell? So they created the hardware that directly connects these. Well, of course, the first thing I'm hearing is that, wow, you can just bypass censored controls of these two dongles, find each other, and it goes over. It's not... transfer protocol of the tip. What do you call it?
HTTP.
Yeah. You know, so they're going, well, it's not HTTP. It was something else. I can't remember what it
was. Right, it's a different protocol.
Yeah, well, anyway, so they have this, and he's going, the speed is regulated a lot by, you know, their ability to prism off and do, and there's a roadblock of data, so it thinks it's, well, our stuff is a flying 18-wheeler that just goes over it using the same infrastructure. And I'm going, so they have 10 times the speed, they're downloading HD video in Shenzhen from account in America. Wow, that is, as far as I'm concerned, that's a Tiananmen Square fax machine. You're just bypassing all that. Oh, I don't want to talk about that. That's not why we're not doing that. Shh, be very, very quiet. You know, I am in freaking China right now. You know, that kind of thing. So then after the show, he comes on and he goes, yeah, I'll tell you a little secret. It's something secret. And what he's doing is kind of a... encrypted box that using this technology that not only does it bypass all the bottlenecks, it encrypts it and you know, from point to point. So this, I'm going out of Shenzhen, and they already got their first 1,000 the actual devices. And the only reason they did a Kickstarter was to get the notoriety. They go, we already have it funded and done. We're ready to go. And I'm going, oh, so these things are just exploding all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm happy, and this is kind of what you've been doing for a while. You were way ahead of the curve on this one.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, all good news. You know, it's good to have you on. You get me started in a positive light. You know, getting Peter on and some negative waves there, but you know, we'll make it. Yeah. We'll make it fun.
All right.
Thanks a lot, Paul.
All right, Ernie. Take care.
Peace.
Bye bye.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
No fear, no fear, no fear, no fear, no fear here on Declare Your Independence. I'm here in the Stancock. Peter Schiff. We certainly want to get an update on all things Peter Schiff. And real quick, we want to a tribute to his father, Irwin, which I got to meet back in 1996 when he spoke at the Libertarian National Convention in Washington, D.C., no less. And his whole thing was, the blue gloves for the video because I got, urethane on my hands and get over it. Two by two hands of blue. What we're going to do is a little bit of an ode to Irwin because he was very effective in describing the government for what it was and the illegality and the immorality of the IRS. And the story of what they did to him was just a lesson for everyone. Now, the fruit doesn't fall too far from the tree. Peter Schiff has been a rabble-rouser of doing it, but in a different way, and managed to stay out of jail. So I'm wondering if you could just, certainly had a big impact on you and your family, Peter. But I'm wondering, what would you, the kind words you might have to say about Irwin or warnings to other people going down this road? What can we learn from this, your father's life?
Well, I mean, my father never basically gave up, no matter how overwhelming and insurmountable the odds. He never stopped fighting, and he always remained optimistic that he would prevail, even though he acknowledged the corruption in the court system. He was so confident that he was right, that he would be able to ultimately prevail. Even though any, I guess a normal person looking at the evidence would have said, look, it's hopeless. There's just no way. But he, he kept fighting until the end. I mean, as he was lying, dying in his hospital bed, he was, continuing his fight and wanted me to continue it, after he died. But it's not really a battle that I can fight. I mean, I know that there's no way to win in the federal courts. I mean, they're not really courts. There's no justice there whatsoever. But I do think that he probably learned more about the federal income tax and understood the federal government's taxing powers probably better than anybody in the country. I think he had a very solid grasp of the Constitution, the Supreme Court cases, and everything that bore on the income tax. And he understood it thoroughly, and that was the problem. He understood it so well that he knew people weren't required to pay. But practically, the government doesn't care about the law. I mean, we're no longer a nation of law. We're a nation of men, and that's unfortunate, and that's why the nation is in decline.
Well, this is one thing that your father really emphasized. We covered it. Vince Aprenowitz, is a Las Vegas Review Journal editor that wrote extensively on Irwin's situation, and that's how we learned a lot about it. And we're going, wow, this is so the lesson that we got out of it. No, there is no justice system. There's not. It's their system. I mean, so I'm going to, give him props for making sure we understood and we learned that this is not where you want to do the battle in the courts of their black road paid for the taxpayer of a gun to your head. And I'm going, if you think you're going to get some judge go, as long as you explained it that way, I mean, it's public opinion. And the impact that you've had in a lot of stuff that you're doing, do you think you've been more effective, or is it built on your father's stuff? Is there any dovetailing between your father's efforts and yours?
Well, certainly my father, helped me to understand economics. I mean, all of my understanding of basic economics, Austrian economics, sound money, all that comes from my dad. And so he set me on the right course. And so that really helped shape everything that I've done. And the fact that I was able to understand so clearly what the problems were in the 1990s with the stock market bubble, in the 2000s with the housing bubble, I was able to understand that the financial crisis was coming, and I'm able to see the bigger picture now, and I see these bigger crises coming in the near future because of my understanding of economics, but for my father's teaching, I might not have.
You know, a lot of the young Austrian economists in their 20s that read downloads on their Kindle of Mises stuff constantly, they were so influenced by some of his, you know, simple writings and such to help them, like you say, understand what's really going on, that they, when you came to Scottsdale a few years ago, they had done some dime cards featuring some of your father's illustrations to his writings and so on. Do you remember that?
Nah, not really.
Yeah, it was a little laminated dime cards that they gave when you spoke in Scottsdale or something. But I remember they were very enthusiastic about making sure you got those. I know it was a while ago. But your father had a big impact on a whole generation of libertarian, understanding the immorality and just the, you know, the injustice of the whole thing. So I'm going, All right, well, your efforts have been different, a little bit more, you know, understanding the how this applied to the financial area, the economy here, and people, by following what you learned from your father, what you've been able to explain to people, EuroPac is now making people some money with some understanding. You come out being right. And I just saw, and you probably, I mean, you do so many of these. It was an hour and a half presentation, November of 2014. And it sounded like it was last week. And I'm going, wow, we had it up on Freedom's Phoenix. Maybe I go, publisher recommend, just listen to it. Donna has taken that speech and put it on her real estate page. She's going, look, you understand what's going on. Here's an hour and a half of, you know, Peter Schiff explaining it to you. And I'm going, damn, man, here it comes again. What do we got to look forward to is going to happen in the market?
Well, you know, I think the market is going to continue to be propped up by the Fed. I mean, you know, every time they think the Fed is going to raise rates, the market is under pressure. And then when there's a hint that they might not raise rates, the market rises. Of course, the reality is the Fed is not going to raise rates. I mean, pretending that it can is part of its plan. I mean, the Fed wants to pretend that what it did actually worked, that we have a legitimate recovery, and therefore they have to pretend that they can raise rates. So they talk about their intention to raise rates, but the one thing they can't do is actually raise them, because then they'll prove that the recovery is not real. It's actually a bubble, and the only thing sustaining it is that rates are at zero. But the truth is that 0% interest rates are not low enough. The Fed needs to do more quantitative easing to keep the air from coming out of this bubble, which is why I think they're going to announce QE4.
Oh.
You know, and that's going to come probably sometime next year. But, you know, it doesn't actually work. Everything the Fed is doing is hurting the economy. That's why it has to keep doing it. Because, you know, when the Fed interferes, it just makes the problems they're trying to solve worse. And so now it has to interfere again, only this time the interference is bigger because the problem is bigger. And it's a self-perpetuating spiral that can only end in a complete, you know, economic meltdown.
Well, do they understand that is the ultimate result, or they just, you know, do a redo, take zeros off the paper? I mean, what's their end game?
Well, I don't know what they understand. I mean, they could just be completely clueless, or maybe they are a little bit smarter than that, but they're just lying. But, you know, I had an encounter with Ben Bernanke, and just in talking to him, to me, he seemed totally clueless. And I'm sure Yellen is even more so. So they probably have no idea. I mean, they know that things are bad, and they're hoping that if they just print enough money, that things will turn around. But that's never going to happen. It's just going to get worse.
Okay, one thing I got from this, when we come back, we get one more segment, then Peter's got to go. But yeah, when we come back, it was the interest rates. If they're at zero now, and we're paying on our debt, the $250 million, $1 billion, you know, all of a sudden it goes to, you know, we got $20 trillion debt, and it goes up to even 5%. I remember here in the U.S. in the early 90s, it was 8%. You know, heck, they went, the Fed Reserve, I mean, it was over 20% when Volcker did. All of a sudden, what happens from nothing to 5%? Heck, that's $1 trillion a year just in interest. And they're not even thinking about it. Peter is. He's going to explain what I just said, you know, when we come back here on Declare Your Independence in just a little bit. Yeah, Peter, that it was that speech that when you made that point, interest rates even go up a little bit, we're freaking screwed. And this is why everybody was going batshit crazy over Greece and Italy going up just 6% or so. I'm going, wow, I remember in the early 90s, they were freaking out when it was 8-something.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, is that something your interest on the debt and how that's going to, one reason why they can't, you know, can you explain that to us, please?
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, there's so many reasons they can't raise rates. I mean, they should raise rates and let all this stuff happen, all this bad stuff happen, because that bad stuff is part of the healing process.
Yeah, no, I understand.
You know, they don't want to.
I understand. I mean, well, the debt, yeah, see, I don't see how this is ever going to, all right, this is my main concern. Here in Arizona, we have the Goldwater Institute, which is kind of, you know, like a Cato thing. We have Americans for Prosperity. I know all these guys, a monthly discussion group, and they're there, you know, want to explain it to me. And the anarchists in the group are like, yeah, you know, save it, unless, you know, we'd rather talk about fishing or something. But the, so we have these meetings and such, and one of the gentlemen, his name is Nick Dranius, that left the Goldwater Institute to run, you know, with Koch brothers doing a thing about we need to have a balanced budget amendment to open up in the Constitution Convention on the one issue, blah, 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 blah. And we have him on, and I'm going, okay, I just need to ask one question. Will my granddaughter still owe all of this debt? I mean, are you just doing a refi on America? Are you getting this generation to sign up for you owe us? I go, then it's a dead letter as far as I'm concerned. I go, it doesn't matter what the hell you do. I mean, it's unpayable already anyway. I don't give a crap what you restructure. I don't trust them anyway. So this is there any repudiation option? You know, $1 trillion
the
platinum
repudiation is going to be the repudiation is massive inflation. They just print a bunch of money.
And so you think that's how they're going to
wipe out the value of the dollar.
All right. I mean, you know, and that's the pain that you say that you're thinking that we're eventually going to have to go through. It's just going to be, you know.
Well, that's not, I mean, no, we would go, if we did the right thing, we wouldn't have a collapse of the dollar. We would have default. We would have bankruptcies. We'd have restructuring. People would lose money. No, what we're going to end up going through is something
Would the government default?
Yeah, well, the government should default. They're broke.
Okay, well, I'm just saying
that instead of defaulting, they're going to print money. And so everybody is going to get wiped out.
Yeah, I'm wondering how that eliminates
the company.
Does that eliminate the debt in any way?
Because it eliminates, because you're going to be if you have $10 trillion bills in your wallet, what's the debt worth?
All right.
You know, if a cup of coffee is $1 trillion, you know, so what if we have a $20 trillion debt? That's 20 cups of coffee.
All right, cool. Well, we're coming back and you explain it to us. Here we go.
.fm on any phone, anytime. 213-493-0309. That's 213-493-0309.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Thing that we are, you know, this is going to end sooner or later. It's going to end, and when they, you know, these guys, they want to do, you know, we're gonna get a balanced budget amendment. We're gonna do a refi on America. We're gonna have a new constitutional convention and say they can't. And now I'm going. Is this eliminating my grandkids' obligation to pay this unpayable, and they're just tax slaves forever? That's dead letter. I don't care. I just nope. Well, Peter Schiff thinks it's going to get done. You know, we're going to sooner or later. It's all going to come down. I'm wondering how, and how would that, you know, manifest itself, and what would we look at, and what would be the government's role in, and how would we Peter, you know, in this segment, please help us out. What you think is going to happen or has to happen?
Well, the debt is unpayable. You're right about that. And there's only two ways to deal with debt that you can't pay. One is the honest way, and that you default. And that is what should happen. The U.S. government should admit that it can't keep all the promises that it made. You know, they keep saying we have to raise the debt limit because, you know, we pay our bills. No, we have to raise, we're raising the debt limit because we never pay our bills. What we need to do is admit that we can't pay our bills and restructure. And that means that people take less than 100 cents on the dollar. That means people that own U.S. Treasury bonds, they don't get back 100 cents on the dollar. People who were promised Social Security benefits, they're not going to get what they were promised. They've got to get less. People who are going to get government pensions have to get less than they were promised. That's just the reality. The government has made too many promises to too many voters to get their votes. But that's not what's going to happen politically. What's going to happen is something much worse, and that is inflation. The government is going to print money. The Federal Reserve is going to print money so that the federal government does not have to default. Everybody's going to get their payments. Everybody's going to get their treasury bond payments. Everyone's going to get their Social Security checks. Everybody's going to get their government pensions. The problem is the money's not going to be worth very much, and it may not be worth anything. You know, we may have hyperinflation. And unfortunately, that is where this is going to end. It's going to end in a currency crisis. Maybe it'll be like the Weimar Republic. Maybe it will be like the Zimbabwe. Or maybe before it gets that bad, we'll finally do the right thing. But between now and then is a significant loss in the value of the dollar and a dramatic decline in the standard of living of every American who earns dollars, who saves dollars, who invests dollars, which is why I am trying to do the best that I can to help Americans protect themselves against that tax, right? My father was trying to get people about not paying the income tax. Well, this inflation tax is going to be worse because it's going to hit your principal, not just what you earn, but everything that you have. And if you don't want to lose what you have to take action now. And that's what I'm helping my clients do at my brokerage firm at Europe Pacific Capital, at Shift Gold, helping people preserve their wealth by getting out of U.S. dollars now and getting into assets that will retain their value, whether it's foreign stocks, foreign bonds, precious metals. There are all sorts of things that people can do now to preserve their wealth, but you have to do it quickly because time is running out.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm feeling the breathing down the neck thing, and I'm wondering, you know, the time frame, it's only about, I always say this, I've been saying this for, God, 20 years, they need to extend this one more election cycle. And I'm wondering, are they going to make it to 2016, you know, a year from now? Are they going to, you know, elections coming up, and are we going to have what we had in 08? And it's like, oh, McCain and Obama's got to suspend their campaign to go to Washington to extend, oh, my goodness, and save us one more time and kick the can. How many times can they kick the can down the road?
Well, you know, that can's getting awfully big, and we're running out of road. That's the problem. But look, you know, the problem is there always is another election down the line, and so they're always trying to get past the next election. And yes, the Federal Reserve is going to try to make sure that Barack Obama doesn't go out the way Bush did, and because I don't think that they want to hand the White House back to the Republicans. Janet Yellen wants to keep it in the Democrats. I think Janet Yellen really wants Hillary Clinton to be the next president, and she doesn't want to have this whole thing fall apart on Obama's watch. So she's going to do whatever she can to delay the day of reckoning beyond the 2016 election, and that means a lot of money is going to be printed between now and then. People are saying, oh, the Fed's going to raise rates. No, they're not. They're going to lower rates. You know, even though they're at zero, they're going to lower them with another round of QE.
You know, explain that. QE, quantitative easing, it's a, you know, I looked it up and it's printing money. But how do they get it?
That's basically what it is. It's monetizing debt, printing money and buying government bonds.
And then there's, well, whatever interest area. I mean, it's just, you know, a private entity that we now owe this money to that they borrowed into existence and we owe it. Just craziness. And I'm going, this is, it's not that which cannot be sustained, like, won't. So we got that to look forward to. So you're at Europac.net. We'll make sure we get this right here.
Europac.com.
Europac.com. Europac.com. We got Schiff, S-C-H-I-F-F, gold.com. Tell us about Schiff Gold.
Well, that's my precious metals company. I advocate that people physically own gold and silver, take possession of it, keep it safe, you know, put it in a safe, you know, in your basement or something. But Shift Gold is my company. We got the best prices on the internet. We also have, you know, individual representatives to help you. It's not just you're just going online and just interacting with a computer. Real people will help you buy the right metal, the right coins, stay away from numismatics, stay away from the, you know, overpriced coins, and just get as much metal as you can for your money and pay as little commission as possible.
Well, I remember you also created some kind of you could spend your gold in a Visa, and it converts it kind of like,
yeah, well, you know, that's at my bank. I mean, I don't know if you have any listeners that are listening offshore, because we don't make that service available to Americans, but we do have the world's first gold-backed debit card where, you know, my gold customers, you know, we store the gold, but you get a MasterCard, and, you know, every time you use it, your gold account is debited instead of your cash account. So it lets you spend your gold if you want to spend it. the
what,
same
you
way
don't love Americans? What's wrong, Peter? You don't love America? Why come Americans can't do it? You don't love America?
Well, I wish I could, but it's too the U.S. government has made it too expensive. I can't afford it. I can't afford to take Americans.
Oh, no, the government doesn't love me anymore. You know, this is, I mean, dang, if this doesn't show you everything you need to know. This is, I'm really glad that you've been out there and willing to take the heat. And this has, I mean, you've stayed out of jail. You follow all the laws, and you got 15 gazillion attorneys, but you, man, there is a lot of similarities, and you're just not going to, you know, let them get by and, you know, kiss the ring or whatever that you got from your father. I mean, come on, you got to give your dad.
Well, you
some
know,
prop.
I think my father followed the law. It's just that he didn't do what the government told him. He did what the law said. It was the government that broke the law. So in my case, I know what the law is, and I know the government doesn't give a damn about the law. And because the government makes its own laws as it goes along, we don't have legitimate law. I pay my taxes the way a store owner would pay protection money to the mafia, right? When the mafia shakes down a store owner and the store owner decides to give the mafia some money, it's not because he feels he's legally obligated to do it. He's just afraid if he doesn't comply with the mafia that they're going to beat him up or they're going to kill him or they're going to burn down his store.
Yeah.
So that's the reason I pay taxes. It's because I know the government will violate the law and come after me if I don't do it.
No, I'm with you, brother. That's exactly going. Hey, yeah, you're a freedom guy. I bet you fill out tax forms. Yeah, absolutely, freaking lootly. And add a dollar. You know, just, you know, I get you another way. Peter Schiff, getting them another way. You want to get them another way? It's Europac.com.
If you enjoy LRN.FM, please contribute to your favorite shows via their websites and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Love is but a song we sing, fears we will die.
I like this song.
You can make mountains ring or make angels cry. Though the bird is on the wing and you may not know why. Come on, hurry now. Smile.
We're up here. Okay, you know, this is, I just, you know, I get the good vibe feeling. We had a really good weekend. You missed a whole weekend. You were off doing what the hell you were doing. What are you doing?
You know, I did a 70-year-old and a 30-year-old father-daughter combination birthday. The neighbors, I got to take care of my neighborhood. So I was over there with my PA/DJ equipment and spending.
Do you wear Elton John glasses and a wig and stuff and go for it or what?
You know, I wasn't, but this 28-year-old girl, no, she graduated in 2008. Her name was Kathy, wearing a black dress. She, one of her first request songs was, "Can you play some Benny and the Jets?" I said, "Where's that coming from?" She wanted to hear Benny and the Jets. Of course, I put it on.
Well, you know, there's a good classic music coming back and do it. You know, that's one thing. I'm gonna share this with the audience, you know, so you understand my perspective. It was about 2000. You know, you start to get Napster, you know, LimeWire, you know, up to like 03, around there, whenever it was, you were able to do peer-to-peer or start downloading MP3s of music, and you're just loading up, man. I'm like, woo, man, getting all the goodies. I still have a bunch of, hell, a lot of the stuff we're hearing is from that. So, they didn't like that none too much. Well, what happened is my sons, as we would be in the garage working on something, you know, a project of whatever the heck, you know, I'd have, you know what? We're listening to my music. I don't know, you're bebopping, dropping, kind of, everybody's black now and you're, you know, dreadlocking, you know, or something. You know, they're just, you know, my sons, I'm going, you know, I can't take it. You know, it's, I mean, some of this is pretty good. I'll listen to that one, but I go, you need some exposure. So I would put in, you know, I had the, you know, these little players that you get back then and such, and have the computer out there hooked up some speakers, and we'd play it. Well, they started getting some Boston, some Led Zeppelin, you know, a little bit of, you know, a foreigner, you know, kind of, you know, the, you know, they're going, damn, Steely Dan's, man, that's some good stuff. Where'd that come from? I don't know. And then MySpace came. When they started doing MySpace, kind of prelude to Facebook for, you know, all you old people. Yeah, you had MySpace, and you would have your favorite music, your playlist, your picture, your whatever. They started to rule and surveil you. And my sons, they would have different stuff. They had a lot of classic rock in there. You know, they even had my son just, you know, didn't sleep well. He's just one of those, you know, high-end calculus guys. So I'm giving him Tchaikovsky. You know, I mean, you listen to each individual instrument. It'll keep your brain, you know, entertained. You'll be able to calm down. So he became a Tchaikovsky fan. So you look on his MP3 list or his song list, and it's all this classic rock and roll stuff I didn't know, whatever they listened to then. Some classical music. All of a sudden, it changed. You could see good music rose to the top no matter what. So it doesn't surprise me. You got a mid-20s, hey, man, I want some Benny and the Jets. I mean, not that that's the greatest song in the world, but I mean, you know. But, you know, it's wide. It's in, and that's what I think our culture does. As time goes on, you know, what's classic and good, and, you know, it comes around.
Yeah, well, there was even some concerts rolling in town. We didn't happen to see them, but I think it would have been fun to see the Aerosmith show, and then Boston was actually in town.
Rare. You always tell me, like, the day of or something. You're Mr. Scalper.
Oh, I went and saw Van Halen. That's right. Van Halen put on a decent show. But the other fun part is watching the people going in.
They're dressed up.
Well,
they're all 50-year-old groupies or something.
Well, and a lot of them are burned out.
Yeah.
They're just done, fried, toast, burned out. But they're still showing up, and that's 80% of life.
You know, they had Pink Floyd. It was Pink Floyd. I don't even think it was... See, what do I remember what it was? No, it was a Pink Floyd laser light at the Dodge Theater. Did you go to that? You remember that?
I do remember it. Every now and then they come in. They have Brit Floyd and Australian Floyd, and they have different variations, but the laser shows as well as just with the music. But I did not, but I'll be up
okay,
for it.
Okay, so this is... I went to that. It was awesome. It's just a big theater, regular, like a, you know, playhouse, and they put this big, giant... you have a laser light show on the front. Well, what happened was everybody's going in like, dude, okay?
Hallucinogens, perhaps?
I'm ready for dude. Well, there was a big group of people that all wore the same shirt. You know, Led Zeppelin and not, I mean, Pink Floyd and Not High or something like that. They were anti-drug fans that they wanted to make it very clear that everybody, anybody saw them there, them and all their friends, they were not high. They didn't want to get arrested, or they didn't want to get on Facebook, or they didn't want to say, ah, you went to a Pink Floyd laser thing? You must be one of them druggies, you know? So they definitely wanted to show their non-drug status, I guess.
But did you get a shirt from them, too, or? No.
No. I couldn't have wore a shirt. I was, hell, I don't even remember the damn thing. But anyway, but the it was really awesome. I like to go to a lot of these shows. They're at the Native American Casino events now. There's one coming up. Paige Peterson is going to be coming on next week. She's coming to, you know, she's not going to be staying here while she's doing her super party thing for Tool. There's a group called Tool that these guys are all over it. And I'm like, who's that?
You know? I think they're a bit on the heavier metal kind of.
Yeah. No, these are, you know, they're headbangers.
Yeah.
You know, it's mosh pit stuff, you know?
Yeah, I just don't get into that. And I try to every now and then. I mean, somebody's recommended me Korn. You've heard the band Korn.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, you look at Ozzy's band. I mean, that's not quite metal. It's not Metallica. But I thought he has some good, you know, we look at
it
Black
was the
Sabbath.
Concerts. You know, it was Ozzy Osbourne and Alice Cooper, you know, is a big hometown favorite here. And you went for...
The show.
You know, there's always the show. And it's kind of going back to that now. You know, it's a lot of you going for the show. You know, that's cool. Of course, $175 a ticket shows for something. Let's go see Cher and sell a kid.
Yeah. No, that is true. Those tickets are really pricey. But see, and you just
had Madonna.
I know. I was going to go there and scalp. Janet Jackson was in town. And what's interesting is these folks are almost hitting that geriatric stage where, you know, it's showing, and
I know a little less fishnet. I mean, come on, man.
Garth Brooks was in town. He's actually in town this past weekend he did three shows.
Yeah, they were saying he's coming. I hadn't a sketch of that. Six. They were going to come back another week, and him and his wife.
Yeah, Trish Yearwood, I believe, yeah.
Okay, yeah, they're still making money.
But even if you just go to Vegas, I feel just hanging out with the DJs there, they spinning some good music. And and they have even some live bands in Vegas that do covers. And these guys are on.
Yeah, no, you're the karaoke set up the speaker DJ guy.
You're DJ for a weekend, KC's DJ service. KC's just contact us DJ. Through Freedom's Phoenix. That's right.
You know, that's one thing that I got, this weekend we had, a lot of the guys over and so on. Of course, Alma and Brian and Neo came by, and they're, what we should do? It's all Jackalope and how she's going to organize Jackalope, And I'm going, it's not, we need, what are you going to do, Ernie, to get the sound system? The sound system, we got to have a sound system. And I'm going, I talked to Duggar or Keith to kind of,
it's possible.
Yeah, we could do something. But I tell
you, rarely when we're up there at Jackalope Fest, do you hear the sound of the forest?
I'd rather it just be quiet.
And where do you hang out when you go up to Jackalope Fest?
Away from where it's noisy, I can tell you that.
Every year, Ernie gets further and further away from the epic, the center of...
the Jackalope downtown, what do they call it? Downtown. I tell you what I'm getting away from.
Main Street, yeah.
Is Alma at 6:37 in the morning going, everybody wake up, time to come to our breakfast. We got coffee, get over here, spend money, come on, get up.
Knock off the sales pitch, Alma.
I'm going, oh, hell no, I'm way over yonder. Yeah, we need to get her a bigger sound system. I'll think about it.
This is Donna Hancock with Silver Alliance Realty in Phoenix, Arizona, and I specialize in helping you find the real estate that fits your needs. Whether you are looking to purchase a home or a piece of land, whether it's in town or a rural setting, I can help you find exactly what you are looking for. Most of us are aware of the turbulent times ahead and will need to settle in a place that will suit our particular desires, not only to protect our families, but to thrive in the coming downturn of the economy. Unfortunately, that time is not in the future, but it is upon us, and if you are going to get ahead of the game, now is the time to prepare. Qualifying options for new loans are narrowing, the dollar is being devalued every day, and living expenses are on the rise. So I have created a useful tool on my webpage at DonnaHancock.com that will allow you to search for properties at your leisure that are of interest to you. Simply click on the Search MLS tab at the top of my webpage to begin your search today. Start preparing for your future, and when you are ready to move forward with your home or land buying purchase, we can work together to get you and your family ready to flourish. Feel free to call or text me at 602-828-1819. That's 602-828-1819, and let's get started today.
You can put the Liberty Radio Network on the air in your area. Visit broadcast.lrn.fm to learn how. Broadcast.lrn.fm.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Yeah, I'm feeling all anti-warish,
This guy still puts on a good show, too. State Fair 2014.
Well,
Fogarty.
Make away the flag, fool the red, white, and blue. And when the band plays, hail to the chief.
They had a CTR cover band at Sun City West. We went out with Gary and Berta, and they had the cover of CTR, Creedence Clearwater Revival is who it is. And, Fogarty was, lead guy on that. But what they did is they played a lot of these songs, and you had these senior citizens out there being all, they weren't wearing the shirts that said they didn't do drugs, okay? Sun City West is party, get over it.
And they've got loads of money to bring it on.
They had a marijuana, that woman that had the accident, did you ever check on her, Donna, from her bike wreck? Contact her, find out how she's doing, what happened. She had to reschedule, but she gave a presentation at the Breakfast Club and then did a thing at Sun City West, and they had hundreds of people standing room only in the basement of a church on marijuana. I'm going, really?
So they're ready to, you know, partake. They will inhale. Okay, one thing I wanted to talk about and show you is The Mirror by Larkin Rose. This is a funding center thing that we did. One of the first things that we did, wanted to show demonstration. Now, we've raised over $14,000 that, you know, has gone through the site. I mean, hopefully he's got more of that. And he's trying to, you know, get up to 50. I encourage you to go to The Mirror, Freedom's Phoenix Funding Center. You go to the Funding Center on Freedom's Phoenix, or you can just, you know, search The Mirror, Larkin Rose Funding Center or something like that. It'll come up. And he did a teaser video. He had talked about this entire thing that he's doing is to try and make sure that you have a resource tool that you can at least learn about or fix your cognitive dissonance of freaking your brain damage that, you know, the man has done to you, and you can get away from that. And he's successful in doing it one-on-one, but he just can't get to enough people, you know, or even give them to read a book. You just can't do it. I got to come with some kind of interactive animation. So last year or so, he's been learning animation. What you see here, Larkin did himself. He's learning how to do this. So let's go ahead and just, it's a minute and 40 seconds. And then we'll show you some drone footage. You know, they had a Phantom out here. Derek is just drone in my backyard, and I even got to land one. No. All right, so here we go, The Mirror.
There are plenty of people in the world who are eager to throw their ideas and opinions at you, who want to tell you what you should care about, what you should believe, what you should think, and how you should live your life. But this is not that. Instead, the purpose of The Mirror is to take you on a journey inside your own mind, to let you explore the inner world of your own thought processes. The Mirror is not about what facts you know or how smart you are. It's about exploring what you believe, how you see the world, and why. An interactive process where the way you answer certain questions determines where you will go and what you will discover next. In here, you are the scientist and the subject. You are the doctor and the patient. In here, you will decide what is true and what is false, what is right and what is wrong. But be warned, while digging into the inner workings of your own thoughts, you may discover things you didn't know were there, things that may make you uncertain and uncomfortable. So the first, and perhaps the most important question, is this. If, for whatever reason, you weren't seeing the world as it really is, if certain misunderstandings and false assumptions were causing you to think things and do things which go against what you really believe in and who you really are, would you want to know about it?
And then the question bar comes up, interactive game, click here for more information, escape, no, yes. And it depends, it's kind of, it's like, what was that? One, the dragon game that we used to play, it was a big deal in...
Hey, Larkin Rose here.
Yeah, you know, it was a big deal. God, what was it? Dragon Slayer or whatever it was. It was an interactive video game that you selected where you went, the next step you took, and so on. And depending on where you went or what you did, it changed the interactivity of the... It sucked a lot of quarters out of you. I mean, it just really, you know... Oh. But, you know, the concept was really cool. And I'm going, all right. So there's, you know, so what do you think of this going down this road, Keith? Is this something that you'd do it?
Well, the question is, I probably should give $20 at least to Larkin, because I really think he's on to something. And I always thought he was on to something when I first kind of interacted with him. I thought he was extreme when I first saw him, extreme but kind of on target. But I think he's less extreme, at least in my mental capacities over the past probably 6 years. So,
yeah. Oh, no, he's extreme, but he's not extreme in his presentation. I mean, he's just, you know, this is it, and definitely doesn't advocate violence. He doesn't go in there. They're going to come violent on you, and you got to make decisions of how you're going to deal with that. But
And he did serve time.
Well, it was a tax thing. It was just like an Irwin shift. I remember how I first heard about Larkin. It was called... Section 821 or something like that. It was section whatever the heck it was. It was an IRS thing. And they had these little mini CDs. You ever look on a CD tray when you put a CD in, it has the tray for the big CD, and then you see the smaller circle. Well, those are made for mini CDs, you know, or DVDs or whatever. So you get these little red and black, and it was, and you go to different festivals or gatherings or whatever, and you'd see hundreds. They're just spread all over the place. I probably still have some laying around somewhere. And that was Larkin's, you know, doing, or certainly a big influence on it. And so it was he and his wife both did. He did a year or something in prison. He gets out, then she goes in. So they have somebody to watch their daughter. I'm just, you know, for 2 years, the kid's out without one of their parents. I mean, I'm just, you know, it's just, oh, they just got to get some. But he wanted to make sure he went through the process. He goes, I don't care what you say. You just got to say it. Yeah, I'll put, do my time, whatever, just say it. So then what does he come out knowing? You know, it's not about justice or law, or so he reinforced what we learned from Irwin Schiff, is that they make it up as they go. So I'm going, okay, so now what do you do? Well, that was the question he asked himself. You know, how do you go after this stuff? And the mirror is the product of all of this writing and interface with people and battling the trolls on Facebook and on the internet and whatever. And Larkin goes, man, I already know what questions to ask. I already know all. I've been doing it for a gazillion times. So I'm, yep, all right. So I want to support him. You go to Freedom's Phoenix Funding Center. Just, you know, put in Freedom's Phoenix Funding Center, then a search, and you see the mirror. It's like the second one there, and we're going to start, we're redoing the pages and everything. We're going to start taking off a lot of the old stuff and putting up the new. We're working, a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes. That was a lot of weekend meetings that we had and saving the universe while Keith was off, you know, like, you know, not saving the universe. What were you doing?
Chilling? When was this past weekend?
Yeah, just chilling.
Had to work Sunday.
Oh, I had a baby! Had a grandbaby.
You did, that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, Laura had her baby, Colton James.
My gosh.
Another one.
Colton James. Sounds like a guy out of the Western. Yeah,
I know. It's kind of cool. You know, the thing.
My nephew's name is Maverick James.
Really?
So, Colton James and Maverick James.
What we would do is, I think we had Corsair. I made a logo. It was kind of like the old Corsair Airport World War II, you know, the gull wing kind of thing. So it had like Corsair in it, and it was kind of a cool logo I made for some party for him one time. Well, Colton, oh, that sounds like a cult to me, man. I'm gonna get in there. Oh, I don't know what I do that. Yeah, I'm a bad grandpa. So yeah. So we'll have some fun with it. But now, little Kellen, that's now just over a year. And Jude, they, you know, my daughters, they're like, oh, no, they're not, you know, they're not with that many grandkids over there. Oh, we'll watch him. You can have the older kids, but we're not letting you have a baby and use them for third base or something. I mean, you know, they're just, they're like, you know, you're not watching them. You're not going to go, wait a minute, they're fine. So now that they're starting to walk, we're starting to get the younger kids. So now we have another baby that, you know, now that we finally get all the kids are coming, another baby. Baby, 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 baby. So, but that's what we're looking forward to, is to, you know, just keep having fun and droning. Oh, okay. Gotta show the drone. You know, what we'll do is I'll just play this out so you guys can see, you know, what it looks like here, because, you know, if you care. And here's, they went around the neighborhood.
What was the range on that, Ernie?
He got to go about half a mile before it started losing the Wi-Fi feed to the phone that he was watching it. You know, this is what you can look down on as a Phantom, and it does pretty good. You know, this is, I was impressed with the clarity of it. Whoop, there it goes.
What's that cost? A couple hundred?
No, that one's like $1,200. It's got skills.
I can't wait till they have those mosquito drones.
Yeah. And then you get to see aerial, because a friend of his wanted aerial shots of Phoenix. He wanted to see what it looked like. So he just shipped a drone for Derek to use.
Oh, wow.